This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.
3-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Coming to you from beautiful downtown Santa Monica, home of the Atlantis Group Studio, where they host us. This is Weekend Confirmed with your host, Garnet Lee. I don't know what possessed me.
Yeah.
Something completely strange. Hey, joined today by a great cast. I have to tell you that Jeff Cannata is over in Barcelona enjoying Mobile World Conference.
What a lucky dog.
I know, right? So he's reaping the rewards of working on... the name of that show he does with Molly Wood just flew out of my head. In Touch? No, it's not In Touch. Anyway.
His show.
The video show that they do. I'm so sorry, Jeff, that it just flew out of my mind, but that's what happens. Anyway, so he's over there covering Mobile World Conference, and he will be, you can see that coverage on CNET, or on beautiful CBSi. We have Jeff Mattis here.
Yeah, I hope Cannata brings us back some castanets. I would love some.
Who knows? He'll bring us back something. He's also gone next week. Son of a bitch is missing 2 weeks. PlayStation 4 gets announced. Cannata mysteriously disappears.
That's got to be a little weird for him.
That's a little strange.
Yeah.
It's a little strange. Do you think he might be involved in it somehow?
I don't know. Conspiracy theories are flying around like...
I think he's just sitting in his hotel room going, "What do you mean? I'm not going to be out!" Because he has no mic to
yell. Oh, sure. Someone else has to scream. And you know, they love it when we scream because... apparently, they don't understand that we use dynamic compression. That's okay. It's a story for another day. That's Christian Spicer here as part of the duo of awesome that's here to fill the other two chairs, along with Mike Schramm.
Hi. The last time I was in this room, I was full of holiday cheer.
Yes.
So I don't know if I remember anything that I actually said. I hope it went well.
By cheer, you mean adult alcoholic cheer.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Gotcha. But thanks for spilling that out.
Yeah, sure.
Well, today you have all the water you can drink.
Thrilled to be back. Yeah. This it's called Arrowhead, and I highly recommend it.
Yes.
Sounded like a cash grab there, buddy.
if only it was a sponsor.
If only I was paid for it. But no.
By the way, I have some solemn news to pass along, and I will actually start before that. I'll say, if you enjoy this podcast, it would be great if you could, you know, share that enjoyment with some friends who like to listen, because we can always use more audience members. It would really, really help us continue to be able to bring you the show. Other things that are nice are reviews on iTunes. Yeah, it actually really helps a lot. So believe it or not, I mean, we are 100% reliant on sponsorships, and sometimes you hear them and sometimes you don't. And the more listeners we have, the more able we are to get those people to back the show and be able to keep bringing it to you and paying the fine folks here at Atlantis who do a great deal for us. But they still like to get paid, too. It's funny thing about Micah. He still wants to get paid. Even for all the great music I pick out for him. So solemn times in the video game business. So first of all, a lot of you probably won't know the name right off the bat, but I had the good fortune of working with James Milkey for a long time. And a very good friend of his, Kenji Eno, who was the composer of the soundtrack to D and to D2, which were a couple of cult-like survival horror games, went on to do some other game work, was out of the game business for a while, but I know that Christian Nutt, who works at Gamma Sutra, wasn't alone in thinking that there was all hope that his return to gaming would bring something special. Unfortunately, passed away in Japan this past week, and you know, our condolences both to James for losing a great friend and to everyone. It was a great musical force in the video game and outside business that we lost, and that's sad. And he's only 42 years old, so that's a shame.
That's really, really sad. Very young, too young.
Go ahead. Well, my favorite story about him I wanted to share real quick was he had some issues, I guess, with Sega. Like, he had a falling out with Sega back in the day. And I think I read this on, I think it was on the Wikipedia page that I was reading about it, but he burn his bridges at Sega. This is back when you could do this kind of stuff in video gaming. I don't think you can do this anymore because the PR people are everywhere and everything's so much, so covered on the internet. But he had a throwdown with Sega, and to show his anger at Sega, he jumped on a plush doll of Mumu, which is the mascot from Jumping Flash. It's the character from Jumping Flash that you play.
Rat.
So he threw, robot or whatever it's called. He threw it down and jumped on it in a 1996 press conference. So that to me, like, talks about what, I don't know, that's a cool, what a cool guy he is. That
he was a really cool guy. I had a really good fortune one time when we were over at TGS, myself and Sam Kennedy. We were hanging out with Milky, and we wound up after a show that Eno did in this little club called Muse, like downstairs, drinking till very late in the evening and swapping stories. And it was a very memorable, awesome evening. So condolences and hopes for everyone to get through that. Speaking of getting through things, then the rest of the bad news is that the new Ziff Davis is like the old Ziff Davis and has pulled the plug on a number of IGN satellite properties, most notably to me being my alma mater, 1UP.com, which now seems to have finally reached the end of the line.
Went down.
You know the joke about it being the slowest sinking Titanic in the history of Titanics. It was a long time coming, and it was unfortunate. You know, like, I'll just say that I wouldn't be who I was without 1UP, and a number of us wouldn't have had those times. And there were some amazing people that I was really fortunate to work with there, not the least of whom are people like Shane, obviously, who's gone on to work for Sony. I think that, you know, a lot of folks you might not know now because they've been out of this for so long. Mark McDonald, who was an amazing editorial force and did so much great stuff. I mean, I have so much respect for these folks. Mark, definitely at the top of my shrine or whatever. Don't tell him that. He'll listen anyway. But anyway, Mark's an amazing guy, a good friend. And, you know, some other folks who have sort of slipped away, you may not have thought of, like Brian Intihar, who worked at EGM, was one of the greatest losses to games editorial ever when he went to work for Insomniac. The guy was a fantastic, fantastic member of the games media. Obviously, you know, other friends that, you know, I had more close ties with through doing the podcast, Luke Smith, John Davison, Andrew Pfister, all those guys. Anyway, all of these things that happened at 1UP, and the era ended a long time ago. It's funny for me to think that it was 2009 when I left. So it's now, you know, going on 4 years since even I was there. And anyway,
it's like the span of a console.
Almost. It's like the span of a console. That's right. And it's really touching to see everybody's remembrances. And it really makes us all feel really great how much all of you guys and gals out there who liked the things we did at 1UP appreciated it. And that made it all worthwhile.
I was fans of all the sites, and I have a lot of colleagues who either got their start over there or, you know, were still working over there. But I do think that the parody account of Kaz Hirai on Twitter, the Kaz Hirai parody account, had the best line about this today. I don't even know who was running the account, but they said, if all of these video game outlets, news outlets keep shutting down, who's going to report on all the video game developers that keep shutting down?
Sadly, that also was true because...
Mean, but funny.
As I'll wrap up the Ziff news and say that also GameSpy, which is an even older network, was also shuttered as part of this. And
That's Kiefer's alma mater.
Kiefer's alma mater. And then UGO, which I hate to say not nice things about UGO, but UGO was a strange entity that we didn't have a great relationship at 1UP with. And so they're gone from New York. But it's sad to see people lose their jobs. And then the rest of the news, of course, EA had big layoffs as well, laying off the team out of Montreal that was responsible for the Army of Two, and then also reportedly laying off a number of staff here in LA. So bad week, and wow, lots of condolences. If you're out there listening, all I can say is, you know, we went through this a lot of times at 1UP, and I would say almost universally, everybody had a hard time dealing with it because it's really hard. And then now they've all found really great places and have foraged on with, you know, living today in the now and having great jobs and great futures. So it's tough, and you'll make it. You'll be all right.
Yeah,
things will work out.
All the best, folks.
All the best. We have lots of new beginnings to talk about in this show. We're not going to play any more little games like Sony did at the beginning of his press conference. As much as I want to talk about Metal Gear Rising, we're going to talk about PlayStation 4, obviously. PlayStation 4 is the big news of the day. All three of my cohorts here will be running different parts of the show like we usually do, but we're going to be really focused on PlayStation 4. We're going to talk about the hardware, the services, the games, our thoughts, our hopes, our dreams. The aspirational nature of it all.
Oh, wow. That sounds amazing.
It's going to be amazing.
Which press conference did you watch? Go ahead.
I watched the one that wasn't very good and turned me off. And I'm going to get out ahead of this right now and tell you that I know that some of you have already been defending the castle walls. I do not have anything to grind. I have no axe to grind with Sony. And I couldn't really... I have no horse in any of these races. But I do feel that Sony's presser to introduce the PlayStation 4 was not up to where it needed to be, in my opinion, and also didn't really reflect all that well outside of the core market who were so eager to gobble it up. And I think we'll talk about some of the reasons over the course of the discussion. And then I'll probably sum up my thoughts at the end, and we'll look at these guys' summation at the end. Let's talk about the hardware real quick. Hardware. All right. So they didn't show the box. No surprise there, because that immediately eliminates hemming and hawing and discussions over whether or not the industrial design of a piece of plastic looks good. And that really is a distraction, because what was important is that they have completely changed their approach. They brought out Mark Cerny as the lead systems architect, which, by the way, for me, that was the high point of this presentation.
Right, right.
Mark Cerny, if you're not familiar with him, is a ultra badass in the video game world. And his involvement, I mean, we'd heard that he was involved, but I didn't realize he was the lead systems architect. Like, that, him being lead system architects gives me immense optimism for what can happen with this system.
Even before we start talking about the specifics of the hardware and then all the games that we saw, you're right, walking, not knowing that Mark Cerny was working on it, and then watching him walk on stage to say, "This thing I built is pretty cool," was mind-blowing.
I went, oh shit, it's on.
Right. He cares about this stuff. He knows about this stuff. He's not, Sony is famous for being clueless at these press events. Mark Cerny is not clueless. He knows exactly what he's doing. He knows the real game. He knows how to create things for developers. And they did that over and over again. Jonathan Blow walked out there, and I don't even know if Jonathan Blow is someone that you want to have on stage.
No.
But as someone who knows what he's talking about in terms of designing and really caring about game design, that was really a really impressive guest spot.
I concur, although I will submit to you that putting a indie game that's been under development for 3 years on stage during a cutting edge presentation
we can talk about the actual games later, but my point that I'm making is that Sony, I thought, really embraced these developers that are really respected and really
agreed.
Knowledgeable. So, and I was
agree.
Really, well, I was really impressed by that, because they haven't done that in the past. They've been Ridge Racer.
I was going to say, thank God they did that, because seriously, it feels like a 180 from how they've been in the past.
Right,
it just felt very Western to me. I mean, you have a white guy saying, "I designed this, I built this," talking. I mean, obviously he's...
We had a whole stage full of guys.
Right.
Period. There were no gals.
Yeah.
We had a stage full of guys.
But Americans, or now in America, some Europeans, but it was also, I feel like Ridge Racer is a much larger, Japanese style racing game, and that used to be the thing, and it's now Mass Effect and Western RPGs are overshadowing
JRPGs. Ono came out and gave a great presentation for Capcom. I thought Ono's presentation
Well, it's still
Capcom
a Japanese
really
company, but I agree with what you're saying, Christian, that it felt like a much more Western-focused event than we've seen from Sony in the past.
For the launch event versus where I feel like before, even if it was announced at E3, it's kind of Japanese-centric, and then you get, oh, here's what we're doing for the U.S. This felt like... This felt like it was kind of
targeted at that.
Well, and very quickly, Mark got into the nuts and bolts of the hardware. And maybe they went a little too far with the nuts and bolts for this sort of presentation. But there's a lot of, this is a pretty juicy piece of kit. He called it a supercharged PC. It's using a x86 CPU, which, if you're unfamiliar with the x86 designation, it actually goes all the way back to the era of the 8086, which we are still sort of saddled by ancient processor technology that's all beholden to, keeping legacy support, which is funny. We're not really worried about legacy support in this device, but then, motherboard architecture and bus architecture necessitates staying in there.
And the actual architecture that they're putting in is not old. It's just the standard.
It's just
old.
The standard.
And
right.
The standard is really widespread. And that's what I think the point he wanted to make is that we are the CPU that they're putting in there is relatively easy to develop for because it's been around for a long time.
Yeah. So. It's a sophisticated APU. It's an x86 architecture CPU. So the idea of this thing is that it's a single chip solution. It's got a CPU, a traditional CPU, and a GPU, graphics processor unit, on one chip. The CPU part is an 8-core 64-bit AMD Jaguar codename design. So it's a pretty powerful processor there.
And then it has 64-bit like the Jaguar?
64-bit like the Jaguar.
Oh, it's the future.
I know.
Their tagline?
The future is now, Jaguar. The future is expensive.
a Radeon GPU. And then I think the piece that people will get most excited about is the 8 gigs of very fast RAM. And they only spit out the GDDR5 spec, and which no one knows what that is. But basically, take it this way. The system memory in the PlayStation 4 is the sort of memory that's often used in video cards, where memory needs to be accessed exceedingly quickly in order to swap in and out and keep up with the pace of rendering.
And a lot of memory needs to be accessed very quickly. Like I remember when hard drives were, an 8-gigabyte hard drive was significant. This is 8 gigabytes of instantly
system
accessed
RAM.
Yeah, instantly accessed memory.
And it's so you can very fast, big bandwidth to
Yeah, I watched a movie last night on my computer. I think it was a gig and a half or so. You can access that instantly and stream it and decompress it and do whatever you want with it. So.
Yeah, and the bandwidth going into that RAM is really high, so it's sharing that memory, but it is great access time. That gives developers a lot of freedom with how they handle swapping content in and out of the system while they're doing scenes, and I think that's going to be a big boon as people get more accustomed to deal with it.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that today for sure. Well,
and then it's got the rest of the last little bits. It's got 802.11n in there, no big surprise. USB 3.0, that's awesome. It's nice that it has a fast way to get stuff in and out USB. And then they showed the PS4i, if only briefly. And the PS4i, it turns out, is pretty badass also. It's got two 1280 by 800 cameras, four microphones, an 85-degree field of vision. It's able to do, you know, triangulation, facial recognition. It is definitely like a fuck you Kinect sort of device.
Is it in the box, though?
No, well, no, we don't know. We don't even know. Right. I mean, look, that design clearly wasn't final either. I mean, it was just a bar with a couple of cameras in it.
But if it's not a pack-in, if it's another peripheral, I don't think it's going to go anywhere again. Which is where I didn't want to derail into Xbox rumors.
I got the sense they were going to include
that.
That's
what I mean. That's what I meant by is it in the box? As it in, like, when you go buy your PS4?
Well, I think you're both right. It was implied that it would come with it, but... Will
Who knows? Yeah.
Well, I mean, one of the last biggest mistakes, I think, of last gen was, especially early on, the fragmentation of the SKUs, right? So you've got and if you're doing stuff beyond just hard drive size, it creates, you know, a problem for developers down the road because they're like, well, what tools can we use? What can we include in this game? What can we, you know? So I think
it doesn't come with the system when you buy it, it's not essential and it can never be a game changer.
Right.
I mean, it just, in my opinion, it can't be revolutionary or that important to a system if they're not.
If everybody doesn't have it.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I think you're probably on
it. I bet it comes down to cost right now. They're trying to. Fuck.
Right. That's the thing. It's like we don't know any of that stuff because we don't. And I think they, like Garnet said, are taking the temperature a little bit on what people react to this. So. It's interesting. I didn't get the impression that it did all that much. Like it reads your controller. Your controller has a light bar on it, so you can kind of see how your controller moves around and how you're motion controlling your controller. But facial recognition, that is a huge feature to me that I'm surprised that they didn't.
So it came up later, and one of the things that's awesome about the two camera system is that they can use one camera dedicated to facial recognition and the other camera dedicated to tracking. And by splitting up those tasks, the camera that's doing tracking or doing video can be running at a higher resolution and better. They're able to divide tasks across two lenses and just have a better efficiency across.
It can
all
be
of
like
that.
Googly eyes, where one's looking this way and the other's looking. All right.
And it'll be great when I'm playing a game that pisses me off and I fling my controller. Now I can like go back and watch the like digital recreation of the camera flying across the virtual room.
Exactly. One lens watches the controller come flying at it. The other lens tries to get out of the way. No.
Here's the trajectory. Like, oh, look at all the pieces flying apart.
And then you have to buy another one. I'm sorry, they're only in the box.
And all of those pieces can be rendered solely on the GPU, right?
Yes, with the Havok physics. Exactly. Hey, so about that controller. People obviously were already talking about the prototype images that appeared now, that appeared and are correct. The device has a touch screen, which people I think had hoped was going to be
panel.
A screen. Touch
screen
panel. I'm sorry. Touch panel. Yeah. They hoped it was going to be a screen. A touch screen is that word that comes out. A touch panel that's in the middle, right above the center of the sticks. Here's my only thought. And I like the way this triggers looked like they were redesigned. The triggers look nice and comfortable. If you're redesigning that controller that far, is there some reason that you couldn't put the left thumbstick where it belongs? I mean, come the hell on.
It's their FU.
No, yeah, I think it's doing this. I think it's Sony saying we're doubling down on this because this is the controller that sold the PS2. That...
Yeah, but you know what? Here, let's think about this for a minute. The controller.
No,
the stick,
I agree with you.
The
that
stick
it should
configuration
be up there.
Yes. Of a dual stick controller by Sony is designed off of one thing. They had the PlayStation 1 controller.
Shit, where can we put these sticks?
And they added two sticks to it. And they're still, like, resistantly sticking to this whole, well, we cobbled those two sticks onto the bottom. We're going to leave those two damn sticks right there because now that's our signature look. You know what? You don't need a signature look in a controller. You need a controller that works well. And the reason, if you look at the controller layout, in the original controller, the key control surfaces, the most important control surfaces, were right on your thumbs. On the right thumb, it's the circle, triangle, X, and square. And that was the key pieces of the things you'd hit with your right thumb. With your left thumb, it was the D-pad. And so the D-pad was under your thumb. Well, we aren't predominantly D-pad folks anymore. We're sticks. The stick belongs there.
So should both sticks, should the Xbox controller have its sticks where A, X, Y, B are?
No.
Because we don't use two. We don't typically. There's still. That's a great question. I think you could make an argument that there could be a controller like that.
There's an important ergonomic reason why the Xbox sets its left stick above the right stick and why they're offset like that. It's because when you're shifting your hands around on the controller, you want to be able to get your thumb. When you're down here like this on the PS2 or PS2, PS3, PS1 controller. It's an unnatural,
you like hook your thumbs down.
Yeah, you got like claw hands trying to get to both sticks at the same time and then move to the buttons. It's not a natural motion. I don't know.
But Christian,
I agree with you. I think that the stick should be up there. However, I think that's like saying, oh man, ketchup is so hard to get out of this Heinz bottle. Like it's not going to change.
They have squeeze bottles now.
Well, now they have squeeze bottles.
And they come upside down.
And everyone knows you hit the 57.
See, they fucking made squeeze bottles so we didn't have to deal with that shit.
Everyone knows you hit the 57, but they will always make those glass bottles and they will always put ketchup in them and they'll always be a pain to get out.
When was the last time you bought ketchup in a glass bottle?
I use it at the restaurant all the time.
I just break the bottle.
You buy it in squeeze bottles now because squeeze bottles were better, and the left stick where it belongs would be better. It's silly.
Heinz
stop fooling around.
Bottle. How dare you, Heinz?
When you're talking about building a piece of hardware this sophisticated and all the things that you can do right, it's silly to sit there and dogmatically be like, oh, but the sticks need to look like they were added onto the bottom of this thing as an afterthought because that's the way we do it.
I bet there was someone in a meeting somewhere that was like, no. We're going to keep the controller as similar to the original DualShock as possible because we tried something different for the PS3 and everybody went apeshit crazy. He's like, no. We didn't get mad because you tried something different with the PS3. We got mad because it looked like a piece of shit boomerang that was even more uncomfortable.
And they didn't even try that for the PS3.
Right.
Like, you could never get that controller.
Yeah.
Right. Oh. It's not even
thank God.
Well, I know. Well, yeah, obviously. But
I don't think it's clearly not changing. That's a controller. Yeah. The one thing that they showed yesterday that was official was a controller, and that's what it's going to look like. So.
Yeah, I mean, in all the things, though, of people outthinking themselves, here's a controller that in the face of Nintendo's success with the Wii, which we thought was predicated on simpler controls and a simpler control device, giving you a controller that's now, it's not actually much larger, though. The measurements are not much more bulky. It looks a little bulky in those pictures, but according to the measurements that people took there,
yeah,
it's not much
it's
bigger.
I want it just that little bit.
A little chunkier?
So your hands are, it's a little small, the current DualShock.
Could you imagine the fanboy meltdown if Sony really did say, we second thought this, and we're going to move that controller to the top? Can you imagine?
No, people would celebrate. They'd be like, thank God you guys woke up.
Microsoft fans would blow up, and Sony
fans
would
be... Put the stick where it belongs.
It'd be crazy.
Yeah, but carpal tunnel among 15-year-olds would go way down.
Well, then that's my favorite gif, even better than the Aliens Colonial Marines guy. The gif of the guy, like, hitting his knuckles together with the DualShock. It's so funny. I'll try to see if I can send it to people. If you want, it's like a guy trying to play a dual analog shooter, but he keeps hitting his thumbs and, like, tangling them together.
It's annoying.
And no, it's totally stupid.
All right, so what about the share button? I think that one of their big innovations is the addition of the share button to the controller. It has a DVR-like functionality that's pretty cool where you can scan back through what you've been playing and pick a clip and share it with your friends, upload it online. I think this is really, really cool.
I think this is the biggest piece of news out of the entire press conference. And not even, like I was saying before, consoles aren't going to get that much better. I mean, the graphics are going to get shinier, and there's going to be more particles, and there's going to be more physics and things like that. But the graphics are about as good as they're going to get. Like, I thought Drive Club looked really realistic. But other than that, graphics are always going to get minutely better, but not hugely better. I think the biggest innovation for the PS4 is the share button. And the reason is because if you go to YouTube right now and look at the top viewed videos, guess what all those videos are?
But you can't see these on YouTube. Like, that's what I feel like the fail.
Well,
for
Sony's
the share
making
button.
Their own YouTube. Like, what they're
Dumb.
Making is that you can distribute video instantly from any console all the time, and they've got dedicated hardware in there that actually does the video in the background. So
but
it's not even
you
like
edit it. Can you do anything? Or it's like, here's this 5-minute clip. Here's this. Like,
yeah.
People don't want
the interface
watch.
They showed was a little simple. I do think that it's going to get more complicated. A As we move toward launch, and then B, after launch, I think people are going to ask for a lot of firmware updates that let you do more with video like
I
that.
I think
but
even
the potential
would,
of it.
Yeah,
I
people would even buy a software update. Like,
right.
I'll pay $15 or $20 for
to cut
for
the
more
video
robust. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But I think
and
the
who
potential
are we
here.
Once the video is up on the net and accessible through any sort of web-based portal, you can rip that shit and do whatever you want
right.
to
and
it.
I'm not even talking about YouTube. I'm talking about you're browsing through games and you want to see a game, so you hit a button and pull up your friend's video of videos from that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're in the middle of a game and let's say you're doing a speed run on a Devil May Cry stage and you want to watch your friend play it as you're playing it, so a little video pops up in the side of the screen that shows your friend's last Devil May Cry run on this stage. Like, that kind of stuff is game changing, I think. It's going to record and send all this gameplay around. And with the technology that they've got from Gaikai, it's all possible. Like, if you load up
That's
on live
keyword,
right now,
though.
You can go and watch people play. They have an arena that you can go in and check out. It's all happening. It's all going down. Now, you say that's the keyword is possible
it's
because
possible.
It's just a potential thing.
They have. I hope it works, but just like, I mean, my internet. Watching the stream yesterday was difficult for a lot of people.
I agree. And that's up to developers. I mean, developers need to figure out a way to make good use of that, too. Like, if they never include a very smooth interface to get the video in the game or share the video around, it's not going to happen. So I do agree that it is potential, and we're talking about hype here to a certain extent. But I will tell you that the streaming internet stuff that's coming out of it is totally possible and totally happening already, like actually existing in the world. And I think it's going to make a huge deal. Like, even the interface they were showing of browsing through your games, like they would show you video of you playing as you're browsing through the games. And it's just going to be ubiquitous video from everywhere, stream to everywhere. It was very, very impressive, the ideas that they've got going on there. So will they carry it off? I don't know.
I hope so.
You know, yeah, I hope so too. But so I don't know if they will carry it off or not, but I think that is the biggest piece of the PS4 and the biggest sign that Sony is doing something different and really spreading this stuff around. So
that's just the tip of the iceberg, really, for all of the services. And if you stick around when we come back on the other side, we will get into some of those things, including David Perry talking at great length about Gaikai and Gaikai integration. And though his energy level was a little questionable, what he was talking about really was another big pillar for me that got me excited about things that can happen on the PS4. So stick around. Weekend Confirmed is just getting going. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get up-to-the-minute gaming news along with thousands of HD videos and screenshots. Get into the action by creating your own profile, post updates about what you're playing, and stay connected with friends and other gamers. Tired of standing in lines? Find great deals on new and used games, pre-order upcoming titles, and get Gamefly's daily deals all from the palm of your hand. If you're already a Gamefly member, manage your game queue on the go and keep games you like with just one tap. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices. All right, we are rearing and ready to hop back in. I'm going to lay a little of the foundation quickly for Christian, just going through some of the basic stuff on the foundation of what the systems were that they showed, and then he's going to take it away. He's got a bunch of thoughts on that. But first, since Christian did think of this, actually, the show that Jeff does with Molly is called Always On. Nice catch.
There you
well
go.
Done, sir. Well done. So system services, the big deal, Gaikai, and look, it was all but a foregone conclusion that their acquisition of Gaikai technology, rather than just licensing it, was right. Because they had big plans for it. And I think that what they showed here that was really cool was that this is why you buy a technology and don't just license it. You buy it so that you can reverse engineer it and use it elsewhere. And if that wasn't coming across well, what's really cool about Gaikai, what really helped Gaikai and OnLive be successful is that their engineers came up with ways to successfully package data content so that they could get it through a, you know, smaller pipe and deliver video at a real enough speed over the internet to allow you to play a game where you're just seeing on the screen what's being played back at the central server. So the idea with those games was you have a controller in your hand, games being played at a server in the cloud someplace, and you have a screen in front of you. And when you hit the X button, the signal goes through the internet to the server, triggers whatever happens in the game, and then you're seeing the display as if your video is connected to the cloud. They've translated that now into a system for the PlayStation 4 that turns the PlayStation 4 into your game server where the game is running, and your Vita with its OLED screen into your portable game screen and control device. And that's really cool potential. And they did include saying that, hey, there's the potential for us to do PlayStation 4 games. And they showed Mark Cerny's game being played right there on stage with the PlayStation Vita. I think that's really cool. That's the promise of crossplay. I am skeptical that.
Right. I mean, just what we said before. It's like, that is a great idea and awesome.
It's awesome.
But someone's got to do it and figure it all out.
And see enough Wi-Fi spots where you can really get enough Wi-Fi throughput to do it. And if it really is the secret sauce in the software, could you update the PlayStation 3 to do that? I mean, is it really that? I mean, this is a deal where we're talking about light clients and, you know, things that are running in the background. Maybe the could have been done on the PlayStation 3, but they're going to hold it for PlayStation 4, obviously. It's a big feature. Anyway, that was a big deal. Part of all that is that they also showed these really cool sharing scenes where I could be playing a game and Christian could be watching me play my game at the same time. And then if we're playing it over a stream, evidently I can pause the game and he can take over while I go to the bathroom and keep playing the game. So I don't know if that's really compelling or not. Like, I want to hand off my game.
It was like the difficult part. It's almost the evolution of Nintendo's. You failed so many times in New Super Mario Brothers that the computer shows you how to do it. It's like you're stuck on this boss, and anyone can now be that kid that we all had that lived down the street that could beat Zelda in 5 minutes. Like, you can be friends with that person online, and he'll be like, no, I got this. And you can get you past a frustrating point. So you just don't quit playing the game.
I think the spectator stuff is actually probably, of those two things, the thing I'm most excited about.
Like, and wrapping up services real quick, the other thing they showed that I thought was really cool is they talked about better integration with existing services. One thing I think is really critical to them, I've actually already talked about this before, but I hope that it does come true, is using Facebook as the underlying architecture for connecting friends together. It makes a lot of sense to me. I think that's
real names.
And I think that would be that, you know, if that works the way we suspect it would, that'll be awesome. And then finally, there wasn't any word, but the rumor is that it's going to be a pay service. So with that in mind, Christian, I've now handed you the wealth of services and fun stuff on PlayStation 4.
Yeah, thanks. So people that know me and have listened to this before and heard me and other stuff, I think I get this reputation as being a negative Nancy, and perhaps I am. So it's right that I'm sitting in Kanata's chair because we share that in common, that we both get really down on things. I'm kidding.
He loves loving things.
And so that's kind of what I wanted to talk about with these promises of services. And Mike, when you said it's a possible, I feel like these are promises, and it's like Sony, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice. I don't think so. This is your fourth time. So, things, and then I can open this up. PS4 promises that I don't expect to actually ever see the way they are presented. The back library being available through the cloud. That sounds great.
Really?
But guess what? My Vita was going to play all my PSP games that I registered with them. That didn't fucking happen. It happened kind of in Japan. It didn't happen here. They went on stage and said you could do that. PS4, Vita Remote Play. Sounds awesome. Do you know what else is supposed to do that? The PSP. That didn't happen. It's not happening right now with the Vita. Sounds awesome. Being cloud gaming, when all of this stuff is available from the cloud and I can play on any device anywhere. That sounds amazing. Guess what they said? Cloud services are going to be rolled out in stages. I'm excited to talk about that later. When does a console launch and give me a console? Wii U launched without Wii TV, like the big thing that they were touting at their press conference. So now I'm excited about the PS4. But I'm trying not to swear because I just want to start ranting. But what do I go get when I buy this? I'm like, yeah, I got it. PS4. And I can play Killzone, which looked awesome. But all this other stuff that I'm really excited about that makes it not just a PC. You know what I mean? Like, now I'm playing, if I can finally play Crysis 3 on high res on my console, whatever, right? This new architecture, better pretty graphics, all this other stuff. There's no guarantee this comes out. And that's what makes me worried, is that the PS3, backwards compatible. It has the Emotion Engine in it. Awesome. You can play all your old games.
Well, the first one.
Exactly. And then not anymore. But now these are just services. Cloud gaming is available, guys. You can play all these old games. It's awesome. Yeah, you know what? This cloud gaming service is really fucking expensive. Let's turn that off. It's like even more stuff you don't own.
I mean, ultimately, they turn it, yeah.
And so you're,
well, let me ask you a question.
That's
into?
A fair
let me ask you a question about
sure.
your first.
Go ahead.
I'm going to ask you a question about your first thing. How valuable to you does the proposition of backward compatibility stand? I mean, like, where does that fit on your radar? Because what's interesting, they started the presentation off with this walk down memory lane, only to lead up to a machine that can't walk down any of those memory lanes. It will only be creating its own new memory lane because it is not natively compliant with any prior PlayStation stuff.
Of physical media. And that's where I feel like the promise of it existing, and somehow, especially if it's cheap, like if you already own the game, if there's a way for you to register it and then you can access it again for free on the cloud, I think that's revolutionary, especially if it's on any device. And so now I somehow register all my PS1, PS2, PS3 games that I have, and then I'm on the road and I can play any of them on
my Vita. Let's be honest, that is not going to happen.
So you have to buy them again.
I don't, and that's the question is, how much will you have to pay? Will there be some sort of compromise deal?
Here's, will the full library be? Well, and here, that's the problem with all of this, is that it's, hey, look how awesome this is. Look how awesome this is. And, oh, here's what you really get. ICO HD. Great game.
Well, here's what I would say to that. I mean, I think that's a really good point. You're exactly right. You shouldn't get excited about something that Sony has clearly failed on multiple times in the past and could potentially mess up again and probably will, let's be honest. So I agree. If you're excited about the back library on PS4, don't be, because very likely, even if it is in there at launch, they'll pull it just like they did with the PS3.
I mean, any of this cloud stuff, though,
if you're excited about remote play, I agree. The thing, you know, they promised that stuff with the PSP. It didn't show up. And truth be told, I don't know how compelling it necessarily is. I think the Wii U, I've heard a lot of people talk about, they can play a game in another room on the thing, but I don't know exactly, you know, I don't know if the demand is there. I think people want to have the chance to be able to do it, but that I don't know how much they'll actually do it.
So,
however, so that stuff, like I said, if that's what you're excited about, don't get so excited, because you're right, Sony could fall right back down. However, this video streaming stuff that I talked about before, and also the Gaikai play, press once and go, like just play and start going. Like I said, that exists. That's happening. And the Gaikai has servers out there at the moment. And Dave Perry said on stage yesterday that Sony's paying for the full plan of servers that he had. He's had this plan for years and years and years. Dave Perry has had. So I think that it's, the thing is, you don't necessarily need to trust Sony. You need to trust these developers. And these developers are people that we respect that are really cool. The Drive Club is one of the games that I'm sure we'll talk about when we talk about games here in a second. But those guys clearly care about sharing video of your cars, like care about sharing the experience around, doing time trials, doing asynchronous gameplay where you run a race and then your friend runs a race next door and they you play the game at the same time. I think all these services exist. All these services are real. They are up to developers to use them. But it's okay to get excited about them, because Gaikai, I think Sony's made a clear investment in Gaikai, and Gaikai very clearly has made this possible and it's going to make it happen on a system-wide level. So I don't know. Does that answer that concern? Because I think your concerns about back library and remote play are very valid. Like, we've heard those promises before. We haven't seen them come out before.
Well, I think those are my examples to my larger worry. Don't get me wrong. I'm jazzed.
Yeah, yeah.
But those are two specific examples where they've promised something and then it hasn't ever happened to make me worried about. And I know that OnLive and Gaikai have had some actual realization of these tools out there. But I'm just hesitant to be super on board and be like, this is going to happen. This is going to be the future, when they then 2 years later, or a year later, redesign the whole system, because it's not there. It's all so liquid that, okay, now, you know what, sharing, wow, these servers are really expensive to run. Holy crap, now we know why Apple has server farms in North Carolina and everywhere. Yeah. Like, we're pulling out of this investment. And I'm concerned about that. In the cloud, everything is out there. Trust us, it's all going to work, and it's all built into this thing. And then you sit down to play, and how many times has the PSN been out during the PS3's life? And like, now this is my everything, and now it's hacked.
Well,
hopefully,
hopefully now that you'll probably be paying for it, it'll be a little bit more.
Hopefully, but yeah, but maybe
to be fair, that is not a problem exclusive to the PlayStation.
That's true.
No,
that
it's
is
not.
That is a modern advancement of where cloud services across the board in modern media are going.
I lost an entire Gmail account, and it never ever came back, and it just completely disappeared. So I'm not saying that this is Sony's fault, but these are my concerns going forward.
I mean, it's fair concern
based off this announcement. Like, those are all the things I want to be excited about, but I'm hesitant to run out day one to buy
it. Mike,
I
feel like I'm less concerned about the withdrawal. I mean, looking back at the PS3 timeline, them removing PS2 compatibility in that device was because it was hardware-based. And it was because it was costing them a lot of money to build the system that way. And whatever telemetry they had showed that people weren't really utilizing PlayStation 2 games, and it wasn't as big a deal. I mean, if you remember, at the beginning of the era, they were like trumpeting how your PlayStation 3 will play this backward compatible library, and you've got this great library of PS2 games, and that's something that the Xbox can't touch. And they very quickly just sort of walked away from that. And we've had this argument. I mean, yes, I'm old. I've been through a number of console transitions. It comes up every time, and it's always this feeling of, I have all these games on the shelf. I loved these games. I don't want to leave them behind. And the reality is, I know from like within weeks of the systems coming out, it's really hard to say I want to go back and play those old games.
Now here's the slight differentiation that I would make between physical media content and the digital stuff, because they still, as far as I know, they've basically come out and said, stuff you bought on PSN, yeah, we have a record of all that stuff, but we don't know yet if we're going to let you either relicense that stuff or play it. You know, we're not sure how that's going to work, if all that stuff that you bought digitally is going to
It's not going to be there at launch for sure.
Well, okay, right. But I mean,
well, it means they haven't decided where they're going to charge you for it.
But how you handle that digital content, see, as an avid game player and a game collector and stuff, like, I don't have a problem having, you know, I still have a PS2 hooked up so I could play Persona 4. You know, like, I still have a Dreamcast in my closet if mm-hmm. I really wanted to bust it out and play a disc-based thing. What I'm worried about is, like, you know, that PSN downloadable that was so awesome that now I guess I could still play it on my PS3, but I mean, does that service go away at some point?
Well, yeah, exactly. How long do they provide that service?
How long do they support both PlayStation networks, you know, to...
Yeah. I think this is all stuff that's like, just going to have to be answered. Like, as a consumer, you'll have to look at it. You know, I'm excited about the PS3 or PS4. I'm not a huge Sony fanboy, and it actually took me a long time to buy a PS3. I have one now, but for a long time, I wasn't interested in it. But I am excited about the PS4. If it comes out at $999, I'm not excited about the PS4. Like, not that I'm suggesting that would be the price, but you as a consumer have to kind of be like, is this game going to be worth it? Will I have access to this game in the future? And if you don't think that's true, then, you know, you're going to have to figure out something else to do.
Right. So let's expand this conversation now to what we know is the press conference.
Before you do, can I hold your thought? Because I'm going to catch on to something that Jeff said that just sort of really made me ding for a second.
Are you okay?
What does happen with the PlayStation 3 iteration of the PlayStation Network if this new thing for the PlayStation 4 is such an entirely new development in their services section of online services that it's not the PlayStation Network as we know it right now, which is what it appears? I mean, Shuhei Yoshida, the Worldwide Studios head, talked about a couple of issues. He talked about the PSN game licenses. He talked about used games. And he referred to their not even having named their system services yet, and that they needed to do that to explain more about how these things would work. So that implies that there is a huge set of services and backend that goes with this. If that's not the PlayStation Network as we know it right now, does the PlayStation 3 have some sort of toned down version that it accesses, can access part of it? Do they run two systems concurrently? What happens to the 75 million people who have PlayStation 3s right now and go
the
online
same
with
thing
them?
That happens to those people with their old games. Like, I think legacy support remains, and they have an old network. It doesn't get updated much, and that's what it is, and you can still play online. And then a few years, that gets turned off, kind of like Xbox did
Online. Aren't the publishers handling the server-side stuff in a lot of cases for PSN? Like, it's not like – I mean, aren't they doing a lot of the infrastructure and a lot of the back-end – I mean, server stuff?
Yeah,
but
PlayStation Network's still brokering the connections.
I don't know. I think it would be a big mistake – not to mention that I lose all my games, but I think it'd be a big mistake on Sony's part to say, well, the PSN never really happened. We're doing something new.
Well, they can't. I mean, they came out at the beginning of this presentation and said, by the way, PlayStation top platform for Netflix.
Right.
So that means they need to keep PlayStation. That's the other thing is, like, if PlayStation 3 to many people has become a media center, that means that PlayStation Network still needs to run in order to deliver video, audio, you know, music unlimited, video unlimited.
Right. But we don't know. Like I said, I think it'd be a big mistake if they did just say, oh, we're wiping the slate, because I think everybody would be unhappy. But I don't know what plans they have. You're exactly right. For all we know, it's brand new day one, and then you've got to figure out what you're going to do with your old PS3 and all the games.
And I don't know. For all the joking we do, I can't imagine they're going to throw home away.
But that's what...
Because they make a lot of money on home.
Yeah.
So you can joke about the Wii U all you want. I certainly do. But it has a whole new... It's online. I'm not trying to make jokes here. The Wii U's online infrastructure is all new and not compatible with the Wii's. But I can still watch Netflix on my Wii. I can still play multiplayer games on my Wii that were multiplayer. It's like they're running two networks. They're running two they're running like eight eShops. But I think that's the kind of system you'll see with the PS3, where you'll have this legacy thing that maintains and you can still access
it. But it is, would you agree, an order of magnitude different in that the Wii online system was fairly rudimentary. It only used numerical friend codes to exchange with one another. And connecting to Netflix is pretty much just a handshake and handoff, right?
Yeah. I think Sony is also a more capable of handling online infrastructure, as they've shown.
Probably so.
And I think eventually they will shut it off. I mean, Xbox, when 360 came out and original Xbox Live games weren't playable, or they turned off Halo 2.
Well, original Xbox was even more fledgling. Like,
sure, but
we're getting to larger install bases and bigger services.
But I think 5 years from now, we'll look back at PS3's online infrastructure and say the same thing, that it was fledgling and so basic compared to all this.
Quite possibly so.
Handshaking.
Quite possibly.
I just, I just hate to lose that library. So we'll see what happens. Because I can understand that, like you said, that they would just go, you know, this is a brand new thing we're working on. This is the official thing. PS3 was just the beginning, but also, you know, there's a lot of games that I have.
Oh, and also we're using a Blu-ray 2 format, motherfuckers.
Yeah,
just kidding.
So blowing up the conversation a little larger, and kind of the same thing. Along the same lines of these are the promises and these are the services and these are what you get. And I don't want to now just crap on Gearbox for the Aliens thing, but how those press conferences went, or those behind closed doors showings of the game, that this is what the game looks like, and then the game came out looking very different. At what point do we as consumers start holding these people accountable that are selling us stuff for what they're selling us versus what we end up getting? And I think video games is a unique industry right now where we're kind of like, oh, that came out, but it's very different than this. Or Wii TV, that looks awesome. Okay, I don't have it on my Wii U. Cloud servicing, that looks awesome, but I don't have it in this. Whereas in like Garnet for Cars, they show you a car, but it's a prototype. It's not the car. When Chevrolet came out with the new Corvette and they unveiled it and they showed you all the things, you're not going to go to the dealership and be like, oh, well, this one has 14-inch alloys. Sorry. Like, no, you can't even get the 19s yet. Maybe 5 years from now. It's a stage plan. And like other things aren't like that. Mm. So I'm curious to get your guys' thoughts. Like, do we hold them accountable and say, don't, or are we okay with like this dazzle magic? Like, we get
excited.
Well,
the Aliens thing was really, the Aliens thing was pretty.
It's a severe example.
Here's the thing.
And that made, I mean, that, look, the media has taken its lumps for that. I mean, there are people out there who seriously believe there's a conspiracy going on, that people in the media had some idea that it wasn't going to be the way it was.
Yeah, it's stupid.
So I was hesitant to bring up Aliens because I don't want to get hung up.
But I'm saying that's how severe that example was. And I mean, to a degree, it exposes, you know, the gap between games media and journalism, in that games media is fed by PR companies, and the thing that you get from media is the media.
I'm not comfortable saying that. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, in a situation like this,
say it. You will say it.
I'm not comfortable with him saying that games media is fed by PR companies necessarily. There are a lot of really hardworking games media guys who do not.
There's a lot of games journalists. There are games journalists who go out and do.
But
look,
go ahead.
Press. But in this situation we're talking about, these are press conferences, and they are choreographed and staged events, and you don't have. Unless you have a very uncommon whistleblower, like deep throat sort of behind the scenes person to break confidence and tell you things they're not supposed to, you don't get to go behind the curtain and you don't really get to know what's back there. You can do your best to try and find out. You can do like what we used to do. Like we pissed off. I remember like going back to 1UP. I remember one time really pissing off the Ubisoft people because we kicked the curtains up when they were showing Assassin's Creed to see what the hell they were playing Assassin's Creed on.
Because
they were playing with a 360 controller and they were like talking about it being a PS3 game. And we were like, what the fuck's going on here? And, you know, you could see, oh, well, they're running it off of a workstation.
Rumors are.
And I think as a writer,
PS4,
I think as a writer, you know, you can piss them off and talk about relationships with the game developers. But that's kind of what you do.
Yeah.
You report. Like,
okay.
You go out and report.
But here's the thing. It's really harder to get further it's really hard to dig further than that. Like, you're not going to go out and take like spy photographs of the new vet.
Well, aren't they though? Stop.
No, so here's
games
the thing.
Journalism.
To
I don't
get back
get
to your original
journalism.
Question, how do we hold people accountable for this thing? You hold these guys accountable at the cash register. That's what I think. Like that's it. If you read a review on a game and it's not good, don't buy that game. If you think the PS4, like I said, I'm excited about the PS4, but if they announce a price that's way off, I'm not.
But not even
spend
that. Can they say? Would it be okay? A larger you, listeners, what do you guys think? Like, if on the box it says PlayStation 4 with Gaikai Cloud Services, and like. And I'm not saying that some government entity should come in and regulate what can be on the box. But you can do this. You can do this. It has these features. It has these features. But like, it doesn't have them.
But if you, it would be like the 360 shipped with a big old sticker on it that said, like the original 360 when it first shipped said, "Will you be Netflix compatible?" Right? And you're like, great. And then like, however many years later, Netflix finally gets added, and you're like, well, that's kind of bullshit. Like, I mean, you finally did it, but like, that's not what I bought. That's not what you were advertising when I bought this.
And
that's
the hard part.
So, Mike, to address specifically what you were saying, if I'm a car journalist, I can go to Scottsdale, and I can go to the like sort of northeast corner of Scottsdale, and just sort of strategically drive around and wait for cars to show up outside GM's proving grounds because I know that they're going to be there. But there's no way for someone to like. Sit outside a gorilla wait for the game to show up on the curb.
But you don't need to be a dick about it, but I feel like someone could have said at the round table after this Sony thing, or just like really press the question, like, you said the cloud services are going to be in tiers. What does that mean? What can we expect at launch? We can't answer that. So why should I write up any of this services when this shit's not going to be holiday 2013?
Well, the bottom line for that is people want to know about it even in this early state, and that's why we're talking about it on this podcast. Even though none of this stuff is confirmed yet.
No, we fell into the trap.
No, I know, but even though none of this stuff is confirmed yet, people want to know, and this is what we're talking about. But again, my point to you is you do it at the cash register, and I'm so tired of all these people who are like, I read that Aliens Clone the Marines was terrible, so I went and bought it, and it is terrible, and now I'm angry. Like, what are you talking about?
So you got to overcome. So what you're saying is you've got to overcome that urge to
you can
just go buy it day one. Like just,
you can you can have fun on the message boards and complain about stuff, but to your point, like if it says Netflix will be compatible with this, you as a consumer, you're spending a couple hundred dollars on that. At least you should know, oh, when I take this home, it's not going to have Netflix.
Right,
on
but
it.
Is it
or you can wait one day?
Disingenuous for the company to put that on the box.
Wait one day for someone to take it home and see. Hey, I fired it up. Did Netflix work? Yes. No.
And right, I know that's an option.
Or
but
and
I
if it
live...
doesn't, take it back. Like hold the retailer accountable. That's all I'm saying is at the cash register. Is where you need to do these things. And I read a lot about iOS games, and that's another place where people are like, well, I thought this game was great, and then they downloaded it, they didn't like it. And so it's up to you. It's your wallet is the deciding vote on this.
I agree. It's an ultimate end point where the buck stops here, but I mean, I don't know. I'd like it if there was a world where we could be a little more honest and or things could be – I could get excited about something that I know I'm going to see. And I know that – you know, people like Gearbox, oh, it's their job to sell. And I know it's Sony's job to sell, and that's what they're doing. They're not up there, you know, they're not doing inside the actor studio and just telling me interesting things like, oh, Garnet, tell me. It's like, here's what we have, whiz bang, pop, 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 is what we're going to do. I get that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I wish that as we move into this digital service, these things are going to be out there world and can be taken away and then added. I'm hesitant. I'm old. I'm scared.
You are not old.
You're not scared.
And I'll tell you, here's the thing.
Hold me.
The more these things become services, the more they become incremental programmed updates and changes along the way. And the harder it becomes to hit, the more it becomes you're trying to hit a moving target. I would be willing to bet you that there is significant debate internally still as to what will be finalized in time for them to launch. Because at some point in time, they've got to draw the line and say, this is the launch feature set. And then they've got to really do some rigorous smoke testing and make sure that shit works over and over and over every way you come at it. They've got to QA that thing every different way, and you can't just continue to let things come in, and yet at the same time there's this laundry list of things that they want to get in. And I could definitely see where, because it is a service thing now, they're like, well, we want to do this. Well, we want to do this. Which we want to do this.
And I do think that as these things get more and more cloud and nebulous and like, what does this service mean? How does this work? Writers like myself and other games media will have to get more and more clear about how we talk about that, about this stuff. Like Gaikai is a pretty fledgling service at this point, and OnLive is another pretty fledgling service. I like them both. I follow them both. Not all of my colleagues necessarily follow them as closely as I do, but they will get very well informed when they pull it up on PlayStation and they see that you can rewind. You know, it'll be more in people's minds as to what this stuff is.
But when you get that service home, it's got to be more than just able to pass that basic test. It's got to be able. See, that's the thing is, like, they've got to, before they can take it final, they've got to do more than just a does it work, does it fire up the way it's supposed to. They've got to be able to rigorously test it and make sure that it.
Which, again, on launch day, you'll see reviews of this system, and they will tell you specifically what it does and specifically what it doesn't. So, you know, we're talking, this is 2 days after it's come out.
Sure.
You know, we're all sort of guessing here, and even they don't have names for half these services, so they don't even know exactly what it's going to be able to do or not. Right. But again, I think it all comes down to, in November or whenever, they don't have a date yet, but the end of this year, holiday 2013, you got to kind of sit back and figure out, which system do I want to buy? How's it going to work?
So, like, the last thing I can leave this for listeners before we break, it's along the same lines. Is they opened this by saying, we built a PS3 and we didn't know that we were going to have all these services, so we found a way to shoehorn them, I'm paraphrasing, shoehorn all these services in. With the PS4, we're going in knowing that this is, we're driving all these services to you, so we've built a system that can handle it. What I'm kind of excited about is 2 years, 3 years from now, what's the bottleneck in this thing? What didn't they anticipate that they're like, so in the PS5 or whatever, it's like, okay, shit, we had no idea that you guys were going to be doing this.
That's some cool futurist shit, and I love that. Like, I love thinking about that. I have. What do you think?
I have no idea. I honestly wanted to leave it to the listeners to.
Yeah, you can leave it to the listeners. I would say bandwidth is going to be a huge concern going forward, like, because we're doing all this stuff.
Just raw video, bandwidth to be able to handle raw video stuff.
Right. If there is a bottleneck, I think it's going to be people's internet connections, and like you said. Streaming over the cloud is great when you're Mike Schramm and you live in Santa Monica and you pay for a high bandwidth internet connection. Not so great when you're Joe in Kansas who lives out in the middle of nowhere.
Okay, middle of nowhere. Kansas City, that's where we're all going to go. Okay.
Google Fiber.
But I think that's the big conversation that we'll have to have with this version of consoles, because all these things are online so much, the bandwidth companies, the internet companies are starting to be like, you guys should probably start paying for all those videos you're sending back and forth.
Dude, I mean, think about that with the Vita as your remote screen for using the Gaikai system. Yeah. I mean,
But that's future stuff. You're right. Let's leave it to the listeners too. They can think of.
I think maybe something in the video system, maybe something related to, you know, video presence. I mean, are we going to get to a point where you really want to have, you know, basically ongoing simultaneously, like a video chat with your friends while you're playing with them online?
It doesn't sound crazy.
Why the hell not? Yeah.
Are you going to want two screens and managing a tablet and a controller? Yeah, fuck yeah, I do. Like,
I mean, it's possible, right? And yeah, so it's some degree of being able to, you know, maybe it's going to be how many screens can it manage? How many video outputs can it handle at once? But yeah, I think you're onto something there.
Well, Jeff, it's also...
Oh, no, I was just going to say, what you were saying about picture in picture with your friend video chatting, I'd love to see like my friend's avatar animated and video chatting with me in a game that I'm playing. And he's
I think I'd rather see that than live video. Yeah, I'd rather see me in my underwear playing Gears with people or whatever.
Yeah, teach their own, but yeah.
All right.
Jeff would rather see. Go ahead.
Not really.
Well, I guess it would be Killzone in this case, since that was the first of the big games. Although we did see Mark Cerny's game before that, but Killzone was certainly the dramatic entrance of the PlayStation 4 games, and we'll kick off with that when we come back into the second half of Weekend Confirmed.
Sure, you can pay $60 if you want to play a video game, but what if you want to play all the latest video games? Try Gamefly.com, the number one video game rental service. Right now, you can sign up for just $5.95, their lowest price ever. Gamefly has over 8,000 titles, including the hottest new releases like DMC Devil May Cry, The Walking Dead, and Hitman Absolution. And here's how easy it is. Just sign up, select your games, and Gamefly will ship them directly to your door. You can keep the games as long as you want, there are no late fees, and you can cancel at any time. Once you're done playing a game, send it back, and Gamefly will send you the next available game on your list. Now, you can also play hundreds of PC games with Gamefly's new Unlimited PC Play, which is free for members. Gamefly also saves you money by letting you try your favorite games before buying them. If you really like the game you're playing, simply click Keep It on the Gamefly website, and it's yours at a deeply discounted price. And if you're still unsure... which you shouldn't be at this point. But if you're still unsure, we're offering our listeners a special offer. This is just for Weekend Confirmers. Go to gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed for an extended 15-day free trial. That's gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed and sign up today.
All right, and apparently you will have some opportunity to still have used and rental games on your PlayStation 4. Not exactly how that's going to work, but it will not require an always-on internet connection. I'd love Yoshida to say about how, hey, some people are antisocial. We understand that. I thought that was kind of funny. But you might not want to be connected. You can turn it off. And then also, as we noted earlier, that you will be able to both have used games, and I guess if you have used games, you'll be able to rent games as well. So we'll see how that works out with the services. Some of those games, though, they demoed, starting with the big show-off of first person. I have to tell this little funny thing. We were doing a Google community with all the old One Up Yours gang. So it was me and Luke and Andrew Pfister and John Davison. And when Killzone started, Andrew typed in a comment that was, T-minus 30 seconds to brown. And we were like, yeah, haha. Because, you know, the beginning it was all colorful, whatever. And I'll be goddamned if it wasn't about 30 seconds to brown. We were
they
like,
turned into the horizon.
We're like, whoa, he called that shit.
It's one of their design. It's in their design doc, I think.
Do you like Killzone? I don't know. I mean, Sony owned it, you know, heart and soul. But that's why they showed it off. But that does not excite me as a gamer necessarily.
Well, let's let Jeff Mattis talk some games.
Okay, go ahead.
And I will give you some. This will be where the part that people want to kill me for starts to kick in.
Well, we got Mike's sort of quick take. But what did you guys? Because I had a very specific thought when I saw. And granted, I was watching it, a pretty crappy stream.
So what was your thought?
Running at like 480p. I was like, man, I just started playing Crysis 3, and I'm like, Crysis 3 looks a little better than this does.
On what?
Well, on PC, but not maxed out. So but, like high
But
settings.
Christian, and you say that, and like they just said this is a supercharged PC, and it's a supercharged PC that's not even out yet, so it should theoretically at least...
No, it's a super priced, mass-produced, hopefully under $500 PC.
But sort this of streamlined fall. To make
yeah.
to play
And by
games.
The way, I can build a hell of a computer right now for about $700 or $800.
True,
a hell of a computer.
Yeah, and the Killzone 3 would look great on it, or Killzone 4, whatever.
Shadowfall.
Shadow, yeah. Which I do like that they're not using a number.
So it's funny you say that, Jeff, because yeah. I tweeted during that part that you know that you could play this game right now. It's called Crysis 3 on a badass PC.
Right.
And even on a reasonably badass, like my box, which is now a year old and is like GTX 580, it will run this at 1680 by 1050 on high settings mostly. And it looks, I'm sorry, it looks on par with that. It wasn't trolling. It was that this is the problem you get in when you go to an x86 architecture and start trying to play compare the screenshots, because you're never going to outgun PCs. Because PCs are upgradable, they're updatable, and even if you're like on par at launch date, a year later, NVIDIA has launched some god-awful, ridiculous, crazy, super-cooled, multi-core, badass processing.
Way more expensive.
Out 1 week later.
Yeah, way more expensive. But what I'm saying is you don't want to get into that gun-to-gun, like screen-to-screen competition like that.
No, you don't. You don't. But it does sort of raise an interesting question. I was talking with one of our coworkers today about this, and as a PC gamer primarily now these days, what it really made me want to do is go, okay, Microsoft, see what you can bring, because you guys are basically both helping me decide whether or not I buy either of your boxes or if I just upgrade my PC for...
Well,
for
and back to that multi-platform thing. If most games are multi-platform and PC is the common architecture, Steambox is sitting pretty, because Steambox is always going to like sit on my couch with a desktop running someplace and putting that image on the screen and holding a controller.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, this game doesn't look quite as good as it should. Let me take out this modular tray with the video card, ship it back to frickin' Steam, and they'll send me, for extra money, they'll send me the blade with the
best
video
card. Well,
Steam's
probably not going to get into the hardware business, but whoever made it for you.
Yeah, whoever made it for you.
But
yeah.
I think Killzone looks good, especially if all those cars on the Sky Freeways were actually running an engine and like all that stuff's happening. And yeah, Crysis 3 on a high-end PC or a medium-range PC looks great. And same with Far Cry 3, but have you played Far Cry 3 on consoles?
Yeah.
It kind of isn't great.
No, it's good. It's not.
It's like 10 to 15 frames a second when shit starts blowing.
There's a lot of screen tearing and stuff. And I think, you know, that's probably the... Here's the thing. When I fired up Crysis 3 the other day, it gave me... The last time I had a holy shit, this looks good moment was when I played Witcher 2, I think, for the first time on PC. And I was like, motherfucker, this looks awesome. Like, I haven't seen... I mean, this is like... I feel like I'm in this world, and there's a lot of, like, ambient sound and crazy, you know... The color palettes that they use in those games are just off the chain good.
Which it did not look that good on 360.
Oh, really?
No, Ariel played on 360.
Oh, yeah. No, no, no.
And so we'll get that. Star Wars 1313 and some of these demos that were like, oh, crap, this is going to be your, I was going to say Dragon's Dogma, because I think that's what it is. Deep Down
is what it's called, yeah.
But like, I think those are the things you'll see now on your console.
I said this early on in the show. I didn't think that the graphical jump was that impressive. I think it's going to look good. And I think obviously if you look at like launch PS3 titles versus the games that we're seeing today, or even launch Xbox 360 titles versus the games that we're seeing today, obviously it's only going to get better and look better. And developers will get better and better at churning art out. Like, even if it's not realistic, they'll get better at putting stylistic stuff in there and using cool ripples and things like that. But of all the things yesterday, the graphics were probably the least impressive to me. And Killzone, I've never enjoyed that world. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. But
this one, I think, could be the one. It's always been dark. The Hellgas planet is kind of dark and like drear brown. If this one is on Earth or wherever it is, and they have some brighter, bigger settings, set pieces, I think it could be cool.
They degenerated into brown pretty quickly.
But that could be a cool, like, oh crap, what's the game? You ended up not liking it. That was supposed to be like moral and the plot consequence.
Spec Ops.
Yeah, it could be a cool world of like new with old ruin, and that could have fun graphical flourishes.
Look, to me, the first disappointment of that press conference was the, we all know what we're here for, but we're going to delay it for a few minutes while we tell you some stories about stuff you don't care about, and hopefully you won't fall asleep. And the second, and then they got into the heart of it, and that was awesome. And after all that aspirational stuff, that they felt compelled to put a bog standard brown first person shooter that looks barely a little bit, but that looks to some degree, depending on your filter, better or more sophisticated than other shooters that are out there, just left me slack-jawed with the somebody doesn't fucking get it. That is not going to get people out buying consoles.
Yeah. I think Sony doesn't, I mean, they are 100% behind Killzone, and I have no idea why.
It's fine they're behind it. I mean, show that game, but out of the three games in that montage, it was the least adventuresome, it was the least next generational, it was the least compelling, and it was just, here's our shooter.
True.
I think part of that problem is because this generation went too long. So imagine if you hadn't seen Watch Dogs before and this was your first time seeing it, but instead we saw it last year looking like that, saying this is going to be on PS3 and Xbox 360. And we were like, no way. So like, we've been ruined by these graphics because they've been kind of showing them like Star Wars 1313. Like, well, we can't say.
Okay. Speaking of which, are they releasing two different versions, like current gen and next gen version of that? Because I'm really confused by what they confirmed and
I think it was intentionally confusing.
Yeah, I don't think they even are 100% clear on how that's all going
to
work.
Oh, awesome. I'm just saying that how, and not to steal your thunder on this one, Jeff, but how that montage didn't start with Infamous is a mystery to me, an absolute mystery.
Infamous had no gameplay
but
to show?
Doesn't matter.
Mystery solved.
That's not what you're, that's not that important at this event. What was important at this event was after you'd had all this aspirational talk about how badass this system is, show me something that is like makes me go, wow. Well, show me something that makes me go, holy
cow. You know
what
they could have shown that, well, they actually couldn't have shown it because it's not ready yet either, but that's going to be great. Probably the thing I'm most excited about on the system that they did not show there, Witcher 3.
Yeah.
That's,
I didn't even say it there. That was like in the later press release.
They didn't.
Like,
that was a pretty big missed opportunity.
They probably just don't have anything ready to show yet. But they did have that really cool put together stuff for Infamous, and I thought that looked really wicked.
Yeah, that did look good. It's like the X-Men game that we never got. You know, sort of.
You know,
could be.
You know, what's funny is I started playing the first Infamous last night after the press conference.
Really?
I had it sitting on my, because I got it free in some PS Plus deal a long, long time ago. So I guess I'm excited about it. But again, that didn't surprised me very much. Like, oh, a new Infamous game. Okay.
I agree. And I mean, I think overall the bigger problem that they had is that for as aspirational as the hardware was with its services and cool functionality, that nothing they showed from a software standpoint took advantage of any of those things. Nothing's what jumped out and you said, hey, this is something you've never seen before.
Well,
this is something you can't do right now.
Because those services aren't ready.
I don't know what else you want to say.
Simulate them, something.
I don't know what else you want to say about Infamous, but I am really excited about Drive Club.
Oh, Dude, I was wetting my pants. But
I mean, Drive Club, I think, is...
As a big-time race fan,
of all the games that they showed yesterday, I mean, the racing part of it is fun, and I like racing games, but what I'm most excited about is, of all the games that they showed yesterday, that's the kind of game that's going to take advantage of this video stuff. Like, the kind of game that's going to really drive the social bit home, that's going to, you know... Real Racing 3 is about to come out on iOS, and that's another racing game that is going to really push the line in terms of... Like, Real Racing 3...
Push the line, I like it.
Get it?
Yeah.
Real Racing 3, when you first... started up, it starts with a race. That's the whole Real Racing series has always just, there's no loading screen, there's no thing, it just puts you into a race. Real Racing 3, the race that you start up the game with, has your friends in it already.
That's
so
awesome.
Game Center images and Game Center names are already in that race. That's how social and open that ready to go that game is. Drive Club, I think they have the same kind of idea. I'm a little worried because it's a launch title, so who knows if they're going to really nail all the things they need to nail. But the impression that I got yesterday was they are starting from square one in terms of making sure that game is social and, you know, feels like a community instead of just a title.
We haven't started talking about comparative, but I can't resist here. You know who that really lit the fire under the butts of? Turn 10.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because look, the name Club is in there. And by the way, as someone who's a huge fan of racing games, I played plenty of Forza 4 as well. And clubs were a big part of that. And I'm sure they looked at that and said, Drive Club, fuck you guys. We do clubs.
We registered that name 10 years ago or whatever, right? Like, I had this idea. I think that was him saying we're not copying Forza with this.
But that is the...
And it means the gloves down.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like,
that is the thing that excites me about this stuff, too, because it doesn't even need to be a racing game. Like a 3D platformer game. I can't find this hidden thing in the thing. Oh, my friend knows exactly where it is. He can save video, send it over to me, and I'll watch it. I know exactly where that is. Like, that type of social interaction stuff is really exciting to me. And, yeah, it looked good. It actually, that was probably the most impressive, like, realistic graphics that I saw yesterday. You know, I looked at some of those cars running by and was like, I my brain was tricked a little bit. I knew it wasn't, you know, it wasn't real video, but it looked good to me. But even outside of the racing game stuff, that social interaction, that like club stuff, like is really, really impressive. And when you think about like Call of Duty Elite, how does that work when you can just upload videos whenever you want and share anything you want and that type of stuff?
I know it's a sacred cow, and I mean, I would not claim this as original thought. I read it, I believe, on NeoGAF, but maybe on Shaq News. Someone asked, how is the Drive Club didn't have the Gran Turismo name on it? How
because
is it not?
Wouldn't it be ready until 2030?
And the follow-up question that I have is, after the way that guy was talking about we're using real-world modeling of every component inside the car, which is the stuff that, I mean, that's exactly what Polyphony has aspired to in all of Gran Turismo games, is like, where does that leave the door open for a Gran Turismo? Like, what do they come and do behind this? I'm asking another really, really question. I don't know. I mean, Gran Turismo is a great game.
I think Drive Club looks to me like a launch title and the kind of thing where it could either take off or not take off. So I think Sony's like, let's have this in the game ready to go because they can't trust Polyphony to get it ready for launch. So let's have this in the box. Let's have this on the shelf ready to go. And then if it becomes a huge community, if it blows up the way that they hope it does, then they have Drive Club and then they can talk about a Gran Turismo later. If it doesn't, then say, well, we tried with a racing game, but now we have Gran Turismo coming in. So.
Or maybe Drive Club is 10 cars. Or something, you know, that's how they limit it. Because they said, like, they showed two cars, and maybe they won't go the Gran Turismo. You can drive a Prius,
you can drive
a Bugatti.
That seems kind of counter, like, the antithesis of, like, what they're trying to do with that game. At least, I'm such a car nut. I'm such a car head.
Yeah, I say, given the heritage of the people working on that project, which they, you know, they put on quite a litany of great games that they've been working on, all of them out of the other European, especially those Great Britain studios. I think there'll be a progression-based system there.
I think
it'll
be cool, yeah.
There'll be a lot of driving cars. They're into that stuff. They're into the car culture. They know it very well. The social component will also be about, like, starting off with your base ride, improving, moving up through the ranks, all that kind of stuff. All the stuff that's been the standard tropes.
I don't think the door's closed on a Gran Turismo yet, though, either. Like,
I don't think it's closed. I'm just wondering.
We're talking about them similarly and everything. Yeah, it's a good question.
It's not that it's closed. It's like, where do they go?
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm the only one that noticed. And I want to ask, like, Jeff, or any of you guys, does Watch Dogs have that? I think maybe I'm crazy, but the guy was on the train. We'll call him Batman. And he was on the train, and then the security camera found him.
Right.
And there was that like a PSN username? Like, what was, did anyone see that name? Is that multiplayer? Or were they implying that was someone else?
I don't know. I don't know specifically what you're talking about. I mean, I know the shot you're talking about, but all I got from that was he's like hacking the camera as he goes by on top of the train.
So I'm pretty sure there's like a pink name, maybe just the name of the camera, but I thought it was like, it seemed like to me like that's what someone's PSN name.
Well, if they're doing this watch your friends video stuff, how awesome
That'd
would it be
awesome,
if they hook
right?
that into the video cameras from the city, right? So you can actually like pop around and
see that's the kind of idea that probably won't be in at launch, but that's a great idea. I mean, that's the kind of stuff
I'm talking about. Show me that shit.
Yeah, I think that
show me that
will show up sooner or later. Yeah.
Show me being able to sit in my den while one of my friends is playing Watch Dogs and having a virtualized set of security monitors from around the city that my friend is playing in.
And if you could fuck with them, like you could alert cops, like if you were kind of the bad guy.
Or like you're a dungeon master for this massive race. So you're like, okay, we're going to throw in a couple of cops here and like a spike strip here. And oh, there it looks like this guy's getting too far ahead. Let's, you know.
Here at the end of the console generation, we're playing with ideas like that. Like Dark Souls, Demon Souls, like they're playing with ideas like that. But I think that when they start from day one with the share button and with this video streaming stuff, assuming that it stays in, assuming they can make the price worth and everything, that is what has me really excited, like the potential that's there. And you're right, it's potential. It's not actually happening yet. But I think there are developers out there who will, from the beginning, design these games to work around that, and it'll be really, really cool. I mean, Spy Party is another game where I think video streaming will be insane to just watch people play and do things like that. So, Diablo 3.
Oh,
coming to PlayStation 4. You're so excited, Jeff.
Can you hear it?
As someone pointed out, I only called this like 2 years ago. For once in my life, I was right about something. Yeah. What do you know?
Why on earth would they save this? I mean, I was more flabbergasted by the placement of the announcement in the show than I was about the announcement itself.
The most exciting thing for me wasn't even Diablo 3, because I love that game. I've kind of played as much of that game as I want at this point. The most exciting thing for me was seeing Chris Metzen on stage at a Sony press conference.
But that was the biggest tease. You don't announce Diablo 3 that way. That's announcing Titan, like you were saying earlier.
The biggest tease was Final Fantasy.
Yeah, that's true.
But that's not even, though, that was not a tease.
Look forward to E3.
That was like an atomic wedgie or something.
That's a pretty accurate description.
Yeah, it's Final Fantasy.
Where we'll
wins
be on
the
Microsoft stage. Come to E3.
Final Fantasy wins the lamest announcement.
It's like, hey, remember that video we showed you at E3 last year?
Yeah,
graphics have been spoiled.
So, but I am excited that Blizzard was there, and I'm excited that Blizzard, because honestly, has Blizzard changed up their game since they released World of Warcraft? It's all been pretty straightforward, I think. Like, it's been PC games, Battle.net, it's been their same strategy, and this is the first time that we've seen Blizzard go, hey, we're going to do something that might surprise you.
Well, let me ask you then this, dudes. Have you seen the, you know, backlash amongst the core PC community who feel that this was their plan all along, and that they cut the legs out from Diablo 3 intentionally? You've read these comments. So the comments thread basically, the comments basically come down to this, that Diablo 3 was a crummy PC game because it was designed all the way from the outset as a consoleification. And that's why they didn't have, for instance, skill trees and skill devices that would have required more input or depth than a console player would want, or that you could do easily with a controller. That's why it has the four-player convention, because four players are the standard number of...
All true. Blizzard wants to be a console company, so that's why they made themselves get bought by Activision.
Well, that was the bigger... The next thing, the next part of the conspiracy is that it wasn't actually Blizzard, it was Activision evilly standing over them and telling them to do this.
No, Blizzard, in fact, they, you don't even know the long con on this, because what they want to do is bring consoles down forever. So what they did is they released a bad Diablo 3, they're going to release it on consoles, then they're going to not release Diablo 4, and then they're going to only release that on PC, and it's going to bring everybody back to PC. So that's the long con on this. That's how it's actually going to work out. Jeez.
So needless to say, I'm guessing you guys don't buy into the conspiracy theory. No. All right, I'll move on. I read that a couple of places. There are a lot of people who are really upset about
it. There is definitely, if you look at the and how early they were sort of being coy about whether or not it was coming to consoles, that was always in their game plan.
Yeah,
and I think when you're designing a game that big, you're like, that is a very real thing. You're not like, okay, let's make this awesome PC game that we definitely want to bring to consoles, but you know, if we use the old control scheme, there's no way we can reasonably do it. Like, that has to be part of the roadmap. You have to know at least what platforms you want it to be on. They may not have known that it was actually going to go there, but I'm sure that was part of their design decision.
Yeah, I don't think it was a conspiracy. Fine. We want our great game played by everybody so we can get the most monies.
Yeah, and I think that's legitimate, but I think it's just silly to say, well, Blizzard knew that the game wasn't that good, but they released it anyway. Like, of all the companies that do that, Blizzard actually has handcuffed itself because it has been pushing so hard for perfection on all of its releases. So it's, you know, that company is not, I don't know, the whole thing's silly. But I am looking forward to when they do bring down consoles from the inside. Because they thought of it way back in 1995, you know, they saw it coming.
They saw it all coming. It's a trap.
Jeez,
it's a trap.
I do want to add really quick that
you got time.
Well, then I'll take my time with it.
I
really.
We have to talk about Year Walk. Go ahead.
Okay, we will. In fact, we'll do that next. I just wanted to give a quick another mention to. I am legitimately excited to play The Witness. Mm-hmm. However, I was more excited to note that the game is also coming to iOS.
Is it at the same? Not at launch, right?
No, not at launch.
That's the thing.
But it's coming to. Yeah, if you want to play that puzzle,
it's coming
game
to PC. I'm sure it's coming to iOS. He said that before. Yeah. I'm sure it's coming as many places
well, like
as he can
Braid.
Put
it's
it.
A, it's a timed exclusive, right?
It's definitely a timed exclusive, though. And I wrote that post on Joystick yesterday, and a lot of people jumped in the comments and were like, "Well, this game's coming to PC too. You should say that." I'm like, "That's not what the story is about. The story is that." Like Unfinished Swan, like Journey, like Flower, Sony is getting 100% behind tiny little developers and saying, here's our stuff. What can you do with it? What can you make with it?
And that would have been awesome. And it would have been awesome if they had talked about how cool the indie pathway to the PlayStation 4 would be.
Yep.
But having John Blow go up there and show us a indie game that's been in development for 3 years that does nothing in any way to spectacularly show off anything about this new piece of hardware that is the... I mean, here's a show about this new piece of fantastic hardware, and that was such... that was another irrelevant, like, okay...
Yeah.
I think The Witness is going to be effing cool.
I think that
cool.
was the message. I agree with you that it probably didn't come across.
But tell the story. Right, tell the story of how cool it is that we've got this awesome pathway for indie games to get into the system and show, and don't just focus on this one game. Like, show me a bunch of things or show me what's cool about it or show me what they love about it.
I'd be willing to bet you that they it's at least likely that they tried to get him to say something like that, and he was probably like, no, dude, I'm going to talk about my game.
Well, why would you want an open-world game with a large world where you can have an open-world game with a smaller world?
All right,
world?
Hang on, Jonathan Blow. Now, just one second. But
I can't
and
believe
honestly,
the games
we made...
that won Game of the Year this year.
All right, hang on, Jonathan
mine.
Blow. All right, hang on. No, but...
Journey game. Ugh.
We
look, I'm going to let you finish. Jonathan Blow is Kanye. He's the Kanye game developer. Holy shit. Mike, I'm going to let you finish. Before I do... My game should have won Game of the Year.
All right, Jonathan.
Okay, you can go ahead. I'm sorry.
And we made fun of that video, but Tim Schafer was in that video. Like, a lot of really impressive indie developers were in that video saying, yeah, we're really excited about what the PlayStation 4 can do and how we can put it on. And that, to me, maybe the message didn't come across, but to me, that was Sony saying, hey, these developers are making great games. Sony Santa Monica, they're making great games. All the guys that we pulled in for that pilot program over there, like, they're making great games, and we want to bring those games to you, and they're only going to be on the PS4. And so that's what I think Jonathan Blow was. And you're right, he's not the right guy to put up there, and you're right, he probably just did want to talk about his game, and that's fine. But I think the message was, we are giving this to even people like Jonathan Blow to let them do whatever they want with it. We're taking time out of our two-hour presentation to let this
see
guy,
that would
see
be the
that?
Best backhanded marketing talk. Thing.
Although I have to say that while I felt like a number of the game presentations were letdowns, two of them did stand out. The Dragon's Dogma.
Clearly, down is what it's called.
The Dragon's Dogma. If next gen RPGs look like that, yes.
Even though
please.
I don't know what they were allegedly was being controlled, like the little icon from knife to sword to whatever was shifting, but the camera angle was so dynamic, there's no way you could play like
that. It was
that.
A QTE.
Like, I tweeted, like, this game looks
awesome. Oh, really? Have you tried to play Metal Gear Rising? Because that has a camera that works about like that.
It's. Metal Gear Rising you can play, but yes, it has a tough camera. But I tweeted, like, I can't wait. This game looks great. I can't wait to see how shitty it controls. Hashtag Capcom. Hashtag Resident Evil. Hashtag their planet shitty.
I'm sure it was
game.
Funny. No, I'm just kidding.
But the most...
do you guys, speaking of dragons, do you think we're going to see a Lair sequel?
The most... No.
No. Lair sequel.
Are they still in business?
No.
Yeah. And I do think it's cool that there was no gimmickification of this presentation. There weren't a bunch of, like, oh, look at these gimmicky kind of things we can do with it. And I'm not suggesting they do that. I really wanted some forward looking stuff. I will say, though, that I thought that the Media Molecule presentation. Yeah. What? You didn't like it?
No, go ahead. Sorry.
I didn't like it. Go ahead.
I don't think. Here's the problem I have with it. It's really cool. It's really artistic. It's really creative. It's really clever. It's really forward thinking. And I love those guys, but I don't know how the hell you make a game out of it, because it's another one of those things that they'll be like a few people doing something with it, and then the video was
I'm moving my water bottle from one side of the mic. That's gameplay.
It was sort of a bullshit video.
Yeah, you'll make your own little 5-minute Muppet show and send it to your friends.
I will make a dick and then share it with people, and then that's what.
Well, yes, and if you're a Christian's friend, he'll send you a dick.
There you go.
Everyone, that's all you're going to get from this.
Clay dicks. And people don't. And look, people have already proven that like there's a small group of people who can do amazing things with Little dicks. Big Planet. And then there's like the larger group that get Little Big Planet and are just sort of overwhelmed and wish it played better.
Go ahead. So
Big Little Planet.
Can't say go ahead and then you start talking. It's a lot of work.
Well, you didn't.
Little Big Planet. Go ahead. Now, anyway, what I.
But I went. What the point I wanted to bring out is that I felt like that was something that was elevated above current. Like, I can't imagine being able to 3D real-time model with a Move controller and sculpt in anything that I own right now. That's a step out there.
My reaction to seeing it was similar to yours in that, wow, this looks really awesome, but I don't know what it is.
what do you do with it?
The story that I imagine is that they are very hard at work on Tearaway, which I'm really excited about.
Does look cool.
And Sony said, hey, make something for the PS4. So it took them about 4 hours to make something. And that's
if they did that in 4 hours, and Alex is a freaking brainiac and amazing programmer.
That's the story that I imagine. Yeah, that's what I would like to think that actually happened, but I don't know.
And the present, that part was too long and the video was nuts, what it aspired to was really was something beyond what's out there. And then like telling us you're in love with the Move now. I'm like, oh, really?
So then we're going to get a kart racing game.
There was sort of a universal groan that went up across the internet when they're like, we're in love with the Move. And everyone was like, oh,
well, that was like, what's his name? Oh crap. BioShock guy being like, I love the Vita. During last year's E3, and then holding it up and then having nothing to do with it. Like,
Ken Levine.
Yeah, Levine, yeah.
Any other game you want to recap the games for us there, Mr. Mattis?
Okay, so we already talked about Diablo 3, Watch Dogs. Yep. Oh, we didn't mention Knack. We haven't really talked about
that. Which is Mark Cerny's game.
Yeah, which is, you know.
Yeah. I think it was a cool display of what his system can do.
Yeah.
That's about it. That's all we can say about it.
You know what? I heaped praise on Mark Cerny, and I continue to feel that way. Knack to me was the new Malice.
The new what?
The new Malice.
No, exactly. Oh. The new what?
Oh.
The new Malice.
That's kind of what you're saying.
I think it had potential to be a ratchet clank, like cool actiony, but with a little bit of puzzles and a cute cartoony world. But who knows if it will deliver?
It looked to me like an interactive tech demo, which I'm excited to see and play, but does not look like a game.
I can't believe they didn't have rubber duckies. By the way, all those things with like falling objects and like crap, no rubber duckies. That was
old,
a miss.
Old man faces.
Oh god. Yeah, let's not even go to old man.
I can't remember. I wish I could remember
on that list
who dubbed it "pedophile in the window" video or whatever. But that's because it's just like this really.
I want to talk about emotions, and how to do that is graphics.
thanks for coming, guys.
Things look more real.
I hope you will stick around. We have the fourth and final segment being led by Mr. Mike Schramm. We're going to talk about some games. We're going to talk about games that we've actually been playing. Mike's been playing. We'll move on. And I don't know. Do we want to wrap up? We'll talk about it in the break, and we'll come back on the other side and wrap up Weekend Confirmed.
Guys, a year ago, I was in New York, and I was protesting factory farms, and the cops showed up, and I was tear gassed. It was a very traumatic experience for me, and those chickens. I care so much about them, and it messed with me a lot. But then I thought, what if those chickens had superpowers? What if they could fight back? And that's why I'm working on this game.
That's the truncated version, by the way.
Yeah,
of the creepiest 20... presentation of the night. It was like, whoa, I'm not.
Now here's a game about a superhero. Let's move on.
He was about to go ham in that presser. It was on.
You know, on another sort of backtracking note, I cannot hear that song by The Knack without hearing the Weird Al cover of that song.
My Bologna.
Oh, yeah.
But you just gave away why we played it. You see, that was like a weekend confirmed
Easter egg.
But now it's almost Easter.
Now it's a real egg.
From those chickens that'll never see the day.
It is your segment.
I get to lead my segment. I already talked about the video sharing stuff. One thing I wanted to talk about, though, was you guys are lucky that you have me on the show today. Because a couple years ago, I was sent, none of the guys on Joystick wanted to do this, so I did it. So I went down to, it was just south of here, I'm not sure exactly where it was, but to Gaikai headquarters. And I got to interview Dave Perry when Gaikai was just first starting out, and would basically
the Venice Boardwalk.
He's down on the boardwalk.
Just starting.
He's
out.
Right next to the guy that sells weed, and he was like, "Oh, this
guy, future.
This guy thing is great." No, they have a big headquarters down south here of LA, and I went down there. And usually, when you do interviews like that, it's like a PR guy in the room, or maybe there's a couple journalists in the room, and then there's a presentation, and you do all that stuff. This was literally me and Dave Perry sitting together in one of his conference rooms, and just for like an hour, he was trying to like I went down there just to get information about Gaikai, but it felt like he was trying to convince me that his company that he poured so much time and money into was worth it. Like he talked at length about, well, you don't understand, when you set up these servers, you know, the latency needs to be a certain ping, and we've put 10 centers around the country, and we put them in exactly the right places so that the ping's as low as possible. And then he explained to me, like, they wanted to put like a little box on Joystick or on Check News where it could say, hey, this game that you just read about, would you like to play it? And you press play in that box and it would just show up in that box and stream out to you. And he's like, there's no install time. You know, you can just hit play, and we've created a technology to just stream these bytes to you and just install it. And he's like, we want to sell these games through EA. And he was very animated. He was very excited about it. And at the time I was like, well, that's cool. You know, OnLive was also sort of coming up at the same time. So the story there was kind of like, here's these two competing clouds services, what's the differences between them? But I always remember, like, he was so excited about it, and he was so frantic about it, and like had thought of every little piece of it. You know, he all he really needed to do was worry about the technology and all that stuff. But online, Gaikai had laid down like exactly 10 servers. They had 10 servers. Like, but this is just the beginning. We've got a plan for hundreds of servers. All we've picked out places all around the world and done things like that. And then yesterday, he showed up on the stage after Sony bought it, and he said, the plan that we had so long ago is coming to fruition because Sony's paying for it. Like, he literally said, this is the plan that we've always thought about. And I really thought back to that day that I sat with him for an hour and was like, well, he's really smart, but I don't know if anything this is going to work. And Sony's now essentially following the dream that he has had with Gaikai. It's very impressive to watch. And so, like you say, well, they have promises and who knows if they'll ever follow in on that stuff. I can tell you, if Dave Perry has anything to say about it, and can, you know, if Sony gives him enough money, he's going to follow through. We're going to see some really impressive things come out of the PS4. And I'm very excited that Sony has stepped out early on it and like really jumped out on the social stuff and on this sharing and streaming stuff, because this is something where we talked about this before. The current consoles have played around with it a little bit, have tested the waters a little bit. And PCs right now, you can go get an OnLive account and check it out for yourself a little bit in sort of a pre-release form. But I think Sony is going mainstream with it. Sony's going to bring it to a much, much wider audience, and that's really exciting to watch for the PS4. So that's just me ranting. You guys have questions, or it's not really a discussion.
Well, it seems like Dave was pitching way back then. Like, he's been working on this pitch. He was like, wait, you're from Joystick? Not from Sony?
Yeah,
oh, never mind. Sorry.
Oh.
That's, he was like, okay, great. So, Sony, here's what I need. Oh, wait, what?
Right.
Oh, wasted an hour.
He did have this idea, and when Gaikai got acquired, I wasn't sure if it was, you know, Gaikai got acquired because the company was not working out the way it wanted, and they just wanted to sell it to someone bigger. But I am fully and totally convinced that Dave Perry is getting to live his dream because Sony is writing out checks for him and saying, here's it. We want to do the streaming stuff. How can we best do it?
Well, and more than just writing out checks, like really embracing the tech and saying, not only do we want the tech to do stream games, we want to build it into our hardware now and use it in another level between our base console and your portable console. Yeah. Like, we really like this idea. We think you're onto something.
Has anybody heard anything about from Japan? Like what the buzz is there? Like any opinions or anything floating out of there? That
because I have not.
I've been just kind of viewing this stuff in a vacuum. So anyway, just a question.
I have not, and maybe that's interesting to know. Like we said, the
I think conference... if you want to know the best way to we do that would probably be listen to the 8-4 podcast.
Yeah.
You know, those guys are always right on top of everything. They're right there in the heart of Tokyo, and Mark and John and JJ are on top of that stuff. That's listen to 8-4. Yeah.
Well, and this is fair, too. I mean, I've talked to some people who are not in the games industry, who are not in game journalism, who have not heard about this stuff at all.
Right.
Like, for who this is a not even a blip on the news. Like, so it's definitely, we're definitely in the early stages of it. I hope that by the time this thing actually gets to store shelves, people understand that there's a new PlayStation out there. But maybe the general public has moved on. Maybe they're all too busy working on their iPhones, playing iPad. So I don't know. The thing I did want to discuss with you guys, though, that we haven't really talked about in the show today is what does Microsoft do now?
Well, that was going to be my finishing move, but I'd be glad
that's what I wrote down.
I'd be glad to get into that.
I mean, because I think the thing that I joked about right before the presentation, I put it out on Twitter. I was like, how funny would it be if Microsoft released a 30-minute video at noon announcing their new Xbox? Like if they had jumped out an hour ahead of the Sony thing, like, and just revealed it and released it. But I don't know. I mean, definitely they're working on Durango. They're working on something. My big hope for them was exactly what Sony ended up doing, which is I hope it's super social. I hope it really makes use of social connections and makes use of video. And I hope that it really pushes on digital download. I think Microsoft has a lot of room, and they've already been releasing a lot of games on demand. I think they have a lot of room to really deliver things digitally in a way that Sony has already. I mean, the Gaikai stuff where you just hit a button and it plays instead of waiting to install it. Not only is that a big fix for Sony on the PlayStation update end, like they very clearly said yesterday, they're going to be updating in the background so you don't have to sit there for 20 minutes waiting for your PlayStation update.
That's the only reason games. I haven't beat Crysis 3 yet.
Yeah, because you got to sit there waiting for it to update. But then the other thing is, you know, the install thing. So I don't know if Microsoft can even follow that. They didn't buy OnLive. They don't have a Gaikai in their pocket to do that type of stuff. So what do you think, Jeff?
I really don't have much of an opinion.
Really? You're just waiting to see what Microsoft does?
Look, here's the thing. Here's the thing that really struck me is, like, the hardware specs for both, you know, at least the pre-stuff that they've, you know, people have been discussing about what Durango is going to have in the box is very, very similar to what's in the PS3 or what they've confirmed.
PS4.
PS4. So from that perspective, there's a small percentage of me that's sort of like, well, is this really going to be such a subjective choice for most people that it comes down to, you know, brand loyalty or which controller you like better or, oh, I like Kinect better than Move or Move better than Kinect or, you know, like it'll be interesting to see what Microsoft's suite of stuff is that they unveil because, you know, there's a lot of system parity right now. Like I don't. You know, and furthermore, on top of that, I mean, I think I mentioned this earlier, is between those two consoles, you know, one of them has to convince me beyond a shadow of a doubt that it's a better move to buy one of those things than it is to, you know, just buy another video card and faster processor for my PC.
Do you think this generation is going to be more about services than anything else? Because that's what I feel like.
Unquestionably.
Yeah.
Unquestionably. And so to me, what's interesting about the way yesterday unfolded, another thing that's interesting about what unfolded yesterday was that in the preamble, Annie House went out of the way to mention that the PlayStation 3 is the, you know, the dominant platform for Netflix. And that was the only service or non-game thing you saw the rest of the event.
Now, there was a slide with things like PS Plus was up there.
Streaming services. Now, you look, I get what they were doing. They're talking to the core, and they were definitely talking to the core, and that's awesome. And that was the approach they chose to take. So if I'm Microsoft, I'm really paying attention to what sort of impact they got from taking that core heavy approach, what sort of response they got, and what sort
of stock went.
Yeah, it did.
Sony stock dropped yesterday.
It took like a 1 or 2% drop.
Yeah. Hmm.
It's like 14 million, but I mean,
I wouldn't say a 1 or 2% is a huge off the cliff sort of drop.
No, it's not off the cliff, but it was interesting.
But it's certainly the opposite reaction that you want to have after you announce a new major product.
Well, sometimes Apple also oftentimes sees it because everybody gets, we're like,
live up to expectations.
That, but
so I think that one of the things Microsoft has to really consider then is how much they sell services, because services were a big part of why Xbox Live became the vehicle through which Xbox became the living room box.
True.
You know, it was though everybody has it now, it was Netflix on your box. And then it's TV services like ESPN Go inside your Xbox, and Vudu, and whatever other services you use. And Last.fm is another way, nice way to get music into your home theater system. And though there are things that replicate those functions now, that was what helped Xbox then. So if I'm Microsoft, I'm thinking about, well, what's the next evolution of that? And clearly that's a big part of the Windows 8 platform. And you know, I've already said it. I am supremely confident, though I have no knowledge whatsoever about this, that the next Xbox will be part of the Windows 8 platform. There is not a shadow of a doubt in my mind that the next console is, to some greater or lesser degree, a Windows 8 device and part of the Windows 8 ecosystem and not living on its own ocean. And that's, I mean, Microsoft's plan seems to have been, I mean, it's a lot of credit to give them that they were thinking this far out, but it seems to be that they were pointing towards this, you know, coming together of everything in the 2013, 2014, 2015 era. And because, look, right now people are saying, look, Windows 8 way ahead of itself. Like, not the right operating system for desktop, not the right operating system for you know, using a mouse and keyboard sort of interface. But then at the same time, if you listen carefully, you hear, you know, Gates and Ballmer out there talking about how one of their disappointments was that Microsoft was way behind the curve and they felt like they stopped being at, you know, out ahead of things. Well, arguably with 8, if it is a, you know, tablet interface and an interconnected world with mobile and everything else, and then Xbox coming to that mix, they could be synchronizing themselves to be together in 2014, 2015. Well,
and the idea of doing a cross-platform PC to 360 game at that point becomes a lot easier to do. Well, or not 360, but Durango.
But sorry. here's a crazy thought, and I'm sure we'll be talking a lot more about Microsoft later this year whenever they decide to reveal whatever they're working on. What if Windows is what sinks the Xbox finally? Because for so long, I feel like the best division at Microsoft, the division that's been doing the best work, most exciting work, has been the Xbox division. And I think it's shown in their profits and even the Windows 8 stuff, the Surface stuff and all those things. A lot of that stuff borrows from like what they've learned from the Xbox dashboard. Absolutely. And things like that. So what if, I mean, Sony doesn't have an operating system that they need support in that way. They can kind of go off the rails and create their own thing.
Or what if it's gone the other direction? What if the Xbox DNA has injected itself back through Microsoft, and this is what brings them into a modern world successfully?
And that's a possibility, but I wonder if, because Microsoft has to oversee this whole operating system, which is a business thing essentially, like, because they have to oversee this operating system and they have to oversee this games entertainment operating system, if that ends up holding them back in some way, like they have to, it has to look like Windows, it has to match Windows, that's not necessarily what people want in a game console. And that's I think why Xbox did so well, is because it didn't look like Windows, it looked like a console, it looked like it played.
I don't think it'll have to be a match, but I think that line is really blurring, and that's why Steambox is the right thing for now, right? That's why it's starting to make so much sense, and Microsoft could be very well positioned with that. So you asked about what Xbox needs to do. I mean, Xbox needs to be successful on all those fronts, and yet at the same time be a, you know, grand slam heavy hitter in the core audience for gaming.
Yeah. I think what they need to do, and they've hinted at it with things I just wrote down to remember, like Beacon, setting a beacon, and they kind of have it now with Bing, where you can say, you know, I want to watch Arrested Development, and it kind of shows you all your options. And that's what Nintendo's trying to do with Wii TV, is consolidate all of that. And I think Microsoft is maybe kind of pointing towards working towards, I think it'd be cool if I got home and have my Xbox turned on because it saw me, or something like that. Like, all that kind of stuff that makes it easy. And I sit down, I come
home,
and I'm
Christian.
Like, yeah, and I'm like, hang out with Garnet. And it's like, if you're online, it's like, oh, Garnet's watching episode 4 of Battlestar. Join? Yeah. And now we're watching it together, chatting. Or, well, Garnet's on, you know, playing Gears 4. Join? Oh, yeah, cool. And I jump in. Or, you know, what's Jeff doing? Oh. And like that kind of...
Yeah, what is Jeff doing?
He's in Spain with all the Spain honeys. I don't know if he is. He has a girlfriend.
Hold on, he's on his Windows phone.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly,
and that's,
right?
That's where that like convergence starts to happen.
And Sony, as much as I love them and champion their hardware, and I think it's great, their connectivity, crossbar / different thing for everything, they've never been elegant. And I think Microsoft is trying to go that Apple approach, where everything's kind of elegant. You have this system. I think that'd be dope if it's just like.
I hope most of their downloadable content takes the Skulls of the Shogun approach if they go Windows 8 as an OS for.
Where it's everywhere.
Yeah. So you're like
but
on your.
Buy it once.
No, please. But for all digital content. I mean, it's the same sort of selling point as that Vita has, right? It's like, you know, take your stuff on the road, you know, like whatever. But and it's not quite the same because you're talking about, you know, PC and maybe tablet devices or something. So it might.
And a lot of that's implementation, like even the Sony thing, like you said, Christian, you know, who knows if that'll work out. Now, buy it once doesn't Skulls of the Shogun is not buy it
once.
You
have to buy it on everything.
You have to buy it on everything.
Right. That's true.
But I think the first console or the first distributor who does do that, then you start talking about that type of thing. Like right now, it's sort of a competition thing where no one does it, so no one has to do it. But if Steam says, hey, you get this on PC and Mac and on the Steam Box, then there's definitely a selling point that you can send over to
and they're all Sony testing it. Like Steam's that. Testing it. Sony's kind of doing it with Vita and PS3 versions. Yeah. And I feel like everybody's kind of like looking into it. But
so
no
I think we're getting there. I mean, that's
in.
A hard sell because obviously they're losing half of their profit. But as a consumer, you get to say, well, I'm not going to buy that. I am going to buy this. And then that's how you do that stuff. So the last thing I want to talk about, because you said I could talk about anything in this segment. That
no,
I
it's all yours.
The last thing I want to talk about is we're going to talk about what we're playing, I think, in just a little bit. But I played this card board game called The Resistance Avalon. Have you guys played The Resistance at all?
If only, Jeff Cannata were here.
He has talked about it. He loves this
It's
game.
Really good. I want to recommend it to everybody. The version I played is called Resistance Avalon, and this is a Camelot version. So it's like a fantasy, like an Arthurian version. But there is a Resistance, which I think is like a future version, and you have spies and all this stuff. But the way it works is it is a box that you buy, and it's got a bunch of cards in it. And have you ever played like Werewolf or Mafia? Where you all sit around in a circle and a few people have roles. Like one person is the werewolf.
I remember that game.
And you put your...
Garnet's a good liar.
Oh, there you go. It's a lying game, essentially. Like, you give roles to people and you sit around a circle and put your head down and say, okay, now the werewolf chooses someone to kill. And then you look up and say, all right, this person's dead. Who killed them? And you guess who that is. This is kind of like that, where you pass these cards around and half of you are... Well, I think it's two-thirds and one-third, but... Most of you are working for good. Some of you are working for evil. And then over five different turns, you have to send people on this quest. And the quest can you vote to have.
That's the game we played.
We played
the sci-fi version of
it. Resistance.
Yeah, we played that game.
Okay. It's a great game.
It was a really good game.
And I played it for the first time this last week and got a real kick out of it. And some of the people who are in the games industry were playing with me are incredible liars. Like really, really, really good
Randy
liars.
Pitchford?
Randy Pitchford did not play with me.
But we already know that one.
But yeah, it's a really great game. And that's what do you guys think about that?
That's pretty good.
Cool.
Garnet is a great liar. He dominated in that game the one time we played. I think it's fun. It's one of those
do you
things.
Have tips
where you,
for lying, Garnet? Why did you do so well?
Don't trust what he says, though. That's the problem. It's a game where I think where you learn about people in ways that you weren't expecting, where you're like, why? Why is my wife so good at this?
It is interesting where it's a game like Werewolf in a certain way.
It's like poker. I mean, you observe how people respond to your reactions, and then you duplicate the actions that got them to respond the way you want them to respond.
All right. That's very technical.
That's not human, man.
I know that is a very technical way of talking about like emotional responses and things like that, but it is interesting that the game essentially asks you to lie. Like asks you to lie to friends, to even when people,
I find the best way to do it is to not lie. The best way to do it is to find a way
to
is to find a way that does not force you to bald-facedly lie.
Oh, so to just be sneaking your lies. Now here's a question: we have this old man demo where he can express faces, and we have cameras.
Wow,
he was expressing faces.
Segways.
And we have these cameras that can show our faces. I would like to see a video game lying game, like an actual where you, L.A. Noire.
Let's say La Noire.
Yeah, it tried to do that, but where maybe it shows a video and you have to convince this virtual character that something that's not true is true, or convince them of something else. Like that'd be really interesting to do as well.
Next gen.
You know what would be cool is if you could do that and you had your virtual character and you combined it with the share button and you could create multiple retakes of your entire whatever it was, your answers and dialogues, and then have
be
to
be an NPC in someone else's game.
You have your own digital capture rig at home.
Yeah.
Basically.
wild. I feel like I didn't do a great job of directing this segment, but maybe I'll try
You got
again.
Like a couple of minutes before we do finishing blues. If you want to talk about anything else, anything you've been playing interesting?
No, I did want to apologize to Christian for interrupting a lot this show. I feel like...
Oh, come on.
I feel like I interrupted quite a bit, and I just wanted to shout that out there. Are we doing... Now, can we do what have you been playing? Because I want to get through that.
We can do it quick. We're, we're at the end
of
the show.
Let's talk about Yearwalk real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
Yearwalk.
Simogo.
It's on iOS. Simogo.
This is year, Y-E-A-R, walk.
Yes.
Walk. It's not ears or anything else. It's
right.
Year walk.
Year, yeah. Year walk, and it's by the guys that did Beat Sneak Bandit. That's probably
their
most.
It's a great game. Yeah. The Bumpy Road is the other one they did, which is really great.
Nothing like that.
I was going to say, both of those are very fun, colorful, shiny games. Year walk is dark and personal and intimate and
kind of creepy.
It's kind of creepy. It's a storytelling game of a sort, but it's also kind of a puzzle game.
Yeah, it's I mean the concept of a year walk, I guess, is, and I guess it's an actual thing.
It's
right?
A Swedish folklore thing. In fact, yeah. There's so much Swedish folklore in this game that they actually released a free companion app to the game to describe the Swedish folklore that's in
what?
This game.
Give you more like the crazy stuff you encounter and stuff.
There's symbols and things. Yeah. Yeah.
Really, really cool, like cutout paper art styles almost. Like, so it's basically the controls are swipe left and right or up and down, and you're moving around in this environment. But the way that it looks is sort of like those old stage plays where they had like the waves on the stage that were like made of wood.
Right. Okay.
And,
oh,
yeah, and so you have depth. You have depth, but it's like they're two planes, right?
Yeah. It's a snowy and it's snowy wood, so it's snowing. And it's funny, like when you swipe left and right, it plays the sounds of footsteps walking through snow. So it's really weirdly immersive. Like,
yeah.
Even though it doesn't feel like you're walking, you get the sense that you're walking. And then every once in a while, when you pan across the landscape, there'll be a little arrow on the top of the bottom. And if there's an arrow on the top, you can swipe up to go to the next 2D stage, or you swipe back or things like that.
So it's a 3D environment crafted via a bunch of 2D panels that sort of lay on top of each other. Very, very, very cool.
It's very oblique. Like, there's not a lot of... There's text. There's no speaking or anything. There are characters in it. There is a story, too, but it's very, like I said, it's very personal. It feels like something that, you know, is really core to these guys, and it's really fascinating. And I wrote a review on TOAW today, and I was telling you, I said, it's a long time till we get to the end of the year, but I feel like when we hit the end of the year and we start talking about like the best experiences on iOS, I feel like Year Walk was probably going to be up on that list somewhere.
It's
game really of the year walk.
It's not. Hey-o.
Yeah, it's definitely. Well, and the whole concept is also really interesting. It's about basically a ritual where you go into your cabin out in the middle of the woods. You don't eat or sleep for a day. And then you basically go out into the woods to figure out what your future is, and that's by all the stuff you encounter and things that you come across, and there's this element of mysticism.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird mysticism stuff.
If it sounds interesting to you, or you see a screenshot or whatever and it looks cool, just download it. I think it's $4 or whatever.
Don't
watch any videos, because it's really about the experience. You want to play it alone. You don't want to play it with somebody talking over your shoulder. You want
take
headphones
that PS4
on.
Yeah. Wow.
It's a really great game. Year Walk on iOS. What do you think of Metal Gear Rising?
You're going to have to wait till next week.
All right.
You're at the end of the show.
Never mind.
We're at the end. What do I think of it? I think that it is incredibly fast. 60 frames per second does matter. The camera is a disaster. The camera is
true,
unmitigated disaster.
But is Raiden naked? I mean, that's what we really want to know.
It's really fun when it works. There are parts of it that are... It does a terrible job of teaching you how to play the game and how to do the things that make the game tick. For too long a time, I felt like I didn't... Like there was something to the combat system that
I
wasn't
parry.
Clicking.
I didn't get parry for like half the game. It was bad times.
And they show it to you, but you don't realize that it's so integral to the game and that you have to figure it out. Like every... If you're into the beauty of the combat, the beauty of the combat is figuring out every enemy's tell and every tell's appropriate time window to parry.
Right. How to deal with it and how to knock it away.
Which is kind of cool.
It does feel to me like Metal Gear Bayonetta, which is not a bad thing. Like, I really did enjoy it.
I haven't played Bayonetta, but having watched it, and Ariel told me I couldn't compare the two because I only watched her play it, but having compared the two, I felt like Bayonetta was a much more sophisticated game.
Yeah, I think Bayonetta is much more dynamic and crazy, but this feels like Metal Gear Bayonetta in that it has a lot of things that are core to the Metal Gear series.
Oh, if you're a Metal Gear fan, you're going to love it because God, there's some freaking long soliloquies here.
Right, and yet it includes some of the things that were really fun about Bayonetta, which is the timing attacks and the real rewarding combos.
It's a fun game.
And, yeah,
no, it's really no lie, fun. It's a fun game. It's problematic, But it's a fun game.
There you go. So there's 45 seconds on Metal Gear Rising. You can talk about it next week.
And yeah, but unfortunately, PS4 upstaged Crysis 3 and Metal Gear Rising. That was pretty quick and good coverage on Metal Gear Rising.
No, there you go.
Not that much more. Evidently, the end boss is a real bitch. A real bitch. Have you gotten there, Christian?
It's Hillary Clinton.
No, I have not, but I have heard.
Oh, sorry.
Anyway, let's do the finishing moves.
It's the weekend, and it's time for Finishing Moves.
All right, I'm going to lead her off, and as many people ask, the big question was, what could Microsoft do? And I think we were talking about what was Xbox need to be, but I'll tell you what they could do with their press conference, because I know you guys are upset with me already about this stuff, but I really think that Sony booted the pooch a little bit on that press conference. Here's what a next-gen unveil press conference needs to look like, to my mind. Number one, when the lights drop out, the very first thing that should happen is a gut punch level, oh my God, amazing game. Something that you are blown the fuck away from, and then you come out and you talk about the hardware, and you don't go as deep into like the bits and the bobbles, but you sure as hell don't show me PowerPoint slides either. This is 2013. If you want to show me cool silicon, at the very least, you do virtualizations of it, and you do some kind of cool sci-fi fly-through, and you show me cool stuff. Like, you have to impress me with it. Tech by itself is not interesting or exciting. Give me that cool virtualization of the tech. Tell me why it's going to be neat, and then move on. You don't need to beat me over the head with it. I do want the tech specs, but then the tech sites will cover that stuff, and they will get into all that. And that's how you do it. And then after you've hit me with the gut punch to start with and shown me the big part, then you do whatever your middle, you know, your meat and potatoes stuff through the middle segment is. You bring out the partners, you talk about all that stuff. And then at the end, you hit me with the haymaker to the face that is the, holy shit, you thought that opening move was cool? Wait till you see this. And then you drop the mic and walk off. That's how you do a hardware unveil. That's how you do it next gen. Microsoft, that's where the gauntlet's at. And no one's gotten this stuff right. And that's why we walk away feeling like, oh, was this good? Was bad? You don't let someone come out and show a video from last summer's E3 and say, oh, check us out at this E3. We'll have something new to show you. Anyway, that's my opinion. There you go. That's my finishing. Christian.
I totally agree. I think we're getting there. Wii U's was horrible introduction. It's for you. Sony's a little better. Microsoft will hopefully nail it. Because we didn't get to talk about it. A couple things just real quick. Crysis 3, I'm not done with the game. I really like it. I've never played Crysis multiplayer, so I'm not commenting on that. But I think it's a cool way that Crysis 1 starts out in a jungle. Crysis 2, you're in a city. Crysis 3 merges the two, and now you're in Jungle City. The graphics look great. It plays great. If you like Crysis games, I think you'll really enjoy Crysis 3, even though I do hear the single-player campaign is kind of short. And based on where I am, I'm guessing a playthrough will take me 7 hours. I'm playing stealthily. That will happen. And then some things that I'm doing, people said I should mention them because people like them. I don't know why. I have a podcast. We don't talk about video games. It's called Uninformed Opinions, and it's with Stuart Nacht, who you might know as Wombat from Cheap Ass Gamer. And we just talk about basically anything. We talked about candy this week. We talked about if we made the Justice League movie. Pick a topic.
I might have to subscribe to this.
It's 30 minutes. We pick a topic. We talk about it for 30 minutes. And it's called Uninformed Opinions because we don't really do any research before. And it's like, hey, we talked about The Wizard and 80s movies. It's fun. People seem to like it. It's that. And if you want me more regularly talking about video games, I do every week on YouTube a really low produced 3-minute thing called Games and Shit, where I yell at people, basically, and say
especially
things.
Especially Nintendo.
It's kind of entertaining.
I built up to that. Now that I have Sony's press conference Monday, Sony fanboys, that's what it's going to be. So if you want to be one of the select 150 people that watches these videos, you can find it at youtube.com/Christian Spicer. And go give this podcast, you pieces of shit, go give this podcast the most stars you can on iTunes. Do it. You're listening this far. You made it to the finishing moves. Go fucking write a 5-star review. You made it this far. Even if you don't like me, do it for the people you do like. Drop the mic. Show footage.
Bam.
Show footage.
Who wants to follow that? Jeff?
Oh, I don't want to, but I will.
All right. Well, let Mike then. Fine, Mike.
I'll jump
you
in. I just want to reiterate, and I want to make this clear. This is Mike Schramm. I am telling you that video sharing, these video sharing features are going to be the biggest deal, I think, of the next generation. Getting people socially involved in games, sharing this stuff, pushing around this way, I think that's going to be huge. So in 3 years, when everyone's like, oh man, I played this game last night, you won't believe what it did with this video, then remember that I told you this right after the PlayStation 4 got announced. And I'm going to borrow a page from Christian. Kanata's on stage all the time, right? Performs on stage.
He does.
So if you're in Hollywood, I don't know how many of your listeners are in Los Angeles, but if you're ever in Hollywood or if you happen to be in Hollywood, we do a show called Drunkards and Dragons up at IO West, which has been blown up lately. People really like it. It's a improv show based on role playing, based on Dungeons and Dragons. We have a big giant inflatable 20-sided die, and we throw it around and like change things in the show based on how the die rolls and everything like that. It's really wild. People like it a lot. So if you like comedy stage stuff, come out and check it out. It's not anything I get paid for. It's not my job or anything, but Drunkards and Dragons is what it's called. It's at IO West. It's Friday nights. I'm sure you can just do a search online and you'll find us. And I don't know, if you come out and if you tell me that you heard me on We Can Confirmed, I'll buy you a free beer.
Wow.
So there you go.
Christian, you don't give me a free beer. Actually, you don't invite me to your stuff anymore.
You don't come to shows. The only show you came to is the one you were on.
I come to other shows. I don't come to other shows.
Improv vs. Stand-Up, starting in April, will be the newest regular show at UCB.
Oh,
if you're in L.A.
That's awesome.
Second regular Thursday show.
And by the way,
month.
You guys know that you don't have to use your finishing moves. I usually then go around at the end of the show and let you like promote things that you're
doing.
Well,
I got Crisis 3 in also.
You did also. All right, Jeff Mattis, finish.
All right. Well, I'd like to sort of semi-echo Christian's sentiments about Crysis 3. I've also been playing it on PC. Very fun. I'm even less far into it than you are, but like I said earlier, it's one of those games.
When the world opens up, though, which is where you got to, that looks awesome.
Oh, it's stunning. Well, I've been and playing on PC on high or very – a combination of high or very high settings. I'm pretty stunned, actually, and it's been a while since I've had that sort of, wow, this looks really, really good sort of reaction to anything. And you know, things look great by and large these days, but that this sort of raises the bar a little bit, at least on PC. The only other thing, only other game I want to talk about is another really cool iOS thing I came across called Finding Teddy. It's a it's an adventure game about a little girl who gets her teddy bear stolen by some crazy tentacle that comes out of her closet, and she enters this mystical world and basically has to find her teddy bear. It's a point and clicker. The art style is very similar to something like Sword and Sorcery. Not quite exactly the same. Sword and Sorcery's, you know, definitely or subjectively a better product, or objectively a better product. But it's very fun, very quick, has a musical component to it. I'd highly recommend it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks very much for sticking with us through the show. Hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to hop over to shacknews.com for the official show thread, where you can talk about your opinion of PlayStation 4, why we're wrong, how crazy we are, all those sorts of things. Thanks to Micah and Del Rio, of course, here in the control room behind the glass. Thanks, guys. Much appreciated to Jeff Mattis, who's always with us on Shack News. Mike Schramm, who you can catch on TUAW, the unofficial Apple weblog, and joystick.com, also does a podcast.
Yeah, it's called The Incredible Podcast, Amazing Awesomeness, although we've been off for a little while. But you can follow me on Twitter. It's Mike Schramm, S-C-H-R-A-M-M. And I'm speaking at GDC, too. Is the other big piece of news.
Awesome.
So, yeah,
that's
my first
cool.
time.
What are you talking? What you talking?
There's the very first day, there's going to be an iOS sort of summit. And at the very end, they're going to do a state of iOS games. And I'm going to be on the panel. So I'm very excited about
Excellent.
It.
Excellent. Yes. And then Christian Spicer has told you a couple of things. Keep up with him at Christian Spicer. And
at Spicer.
At Spicer.
And if you're in LA, let's hang out. Let's be friends in real life.
Oh,
wow.
If you're not my friend, don't come hang out with me then. That'd just be weird.
And his beautiful baby is doing awesome.
She's so far a real good shitbag.
You're so bad.
I love her very much.
All right, everybody. Thanks very much for joining us. That's your Weekend Confirmed. Until next week, we are Ghost. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Yeah, come on. It took a minute for me to see what was going down. My body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hear me with another round. I got a feeling she's ready. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.